The president in Washington sends word that he wishes to buy our land. But how can you buy or sell the sky, the land? The idea is strange to us. Every part of this earth is sacred to my people. Every shining pine needle, every sandy shore, every mist in the dark woods, every meadow, all are holy in the memory and experience of my people. We're part of the earth and it is part of us. The perfumed flowers are our sisters. The bear, the deer, the great eagle, these are our brothers. Each ghostly reflection in the clear water of the lakes tells of events and memories in the life of my people. The water's murmur is the voice of my father's father. The rivers are our brothers. They carry our canoes and feed our children. If we sell you our land, remember that the air is precious to us, that the air shares its spirit with all the life it supports. The wind that gave our grandfather his first breath also receives his last sigh. This we know. The earth does not belong to man. Man belongs to the earth. All things are connected like the blood that unites us all. Man did not weave the web of life. He is merely a strand in it. Whatever he does to the web, he does to himself. Your destiny is a mystery to us. What will happen when the buffalo are all slaughtered? What will happen when the secret corners of the forest are heavy with the scent of many men, and the view of the ripe hills is blotted by talking wires? The end of living and the beginning of survival. When the last red man has vanished with his wilderness and his memory is only the shadow of a cloud moving across the prairie, will these shores and forests still be here? Will there be any spirit of my people left? We love this earth as a newborn loves its mother's heartbeat. So if we sell you our land, love it as we've loved it. Care for it as we've cared for it. Hold in your mind the memory of the land as it is when you receive it. Preserve the land for all children and love it as God loves us all. One thing we know, there's only one God. No man, be he red man or white man, can be apart. We are brothers after all.
KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit. We'll be back with you in just a few minutes.
Ride my drum to nether regions, where spirits swell in numbers legion, looking for a home for Mr. Kyle. In pebbles, grain, or tree trunk standing, a vessel waits my gentle handling. I'll carve a way home for Mr. Kyle. Mr. Kyle, you so resemble me, Mr. Kyle. My spirit bound in effigy, Mr. Kyle. You're more than just a memory, Mr. Kyle. Climb the tree, nine branches waving. Hang nine nights for understanding. See if I can see a home for Kyle. Kingfisher flies along the beaches. He sails away to nether reaches. Inquire with him about a home for Kyle. Mr. Kyle, you so resemble me, Mr. Kyle. My spirit bound in effigy, Mr. Kyle. More than just a memory, Mr. Kyle. Mr. Kyle, you so resemble me, Mr. Kyle. Your spirit bound in effigy, Mr. Kyle. You're more than just a memory, Mr. Kyle.
Mr. Ka. It's Mike Hagan. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia. That's a piece of music from Perry Comitatus from the CD Kindred Sith. Wonderful music. We'll hear some more of that throughout the program tonight. And it's a pleasure to be with you all here on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Good evening to you all. Good morning, good day, whoever you might be, wherever you may be as you listen to this program. You are listening to it. And my name is Mike Hagan. It's good to be here with you all. I'm excited about the show tonight. We got all kinds of things happening here in the studio, even though it's relatively quiet right now. I can't believe it. There's nine people in here, I think. And we are going to start off the program by saying thanks the way we normally do to Corey. New Wave Radio Theater every Monday, 1 hour before this program. Corey does it up for you. Radio Theater on KOPN Columbia. You can always hear an interesting piece of historical stuff typically. Ha! We haven't even had the absinthe yet. Anyway, next week I will be sitting in and I will be Corey and we'll play the rest of The Wizard of Oz for you and try to raise a little bit more money for the radio station here. By the way, we are in the middle of a pledge drive, and as you've been hearing throughout the day, the number is 573-874-5676, 1-800-895-KOPN. If you'd like to call and pledge your support, become a member to KOPN, and join this amazing group of people that that do things here at the radio station and have been for over 35 years now. Okay, tonight we have a special show for you. And what we should first tell y'all is that Richard Allen Miller, who is a regular and very popular guest of this program, is actually with me here in the studio live tonight and made a pilgrimage here to Columbia, Missouri, as it were. And I would like to say hello, Rick. How are you, man?
Hey. Hi, Mike.
How
nice to be here. Nice to actually physically have a darshan. You want this down closer
you
to me?
You can pull it a little closer, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. In fact, even pull it like with a little bit of effort toward you. You can bring it a lot closer if you want.
Okay.
There you go.
Well,
you
I'm going to be drinking over here.
All right.
I just wanted to...
Darshan, eye to eye.
Darshan,
right?
Eyeball to eyeball.
Yeah.
That's where you touch your master or you touch a teacher or a friend or a lover and you have union for a moment.
Well, we've had a chance to do that for a few hours, and it's been a thrill. We had Rick and Mick, actually both of them, got to town a little bit earlier today, and Rick has good reason to be here. And you've been in the Midwest before. You've been to Missouri, but it was years ago, I think.
Yeah, right? I used to speak at Acres, USA, under Chuck Walters.
Hmm.
Now it's all moved out of the state, but it's down in Texas now. But Chuck used to have... large crowds. In 1 year...
That was agriculture stuff, right?
Right. Acres USA is the largest tabloid in the world for agriculture and sustainable ag. Chuck was a German. Wir wollen Deutsche bleiben. We all speak German.
Ja,
that
ich kann
guy.
Guten Deutsch, ja.
Ja, ich lernte Deutsch in der Schule. Also, ich spreche so ziemlich, ja?
Ja, ich kann gut Deutsch. Ja, ich habe in Berchtesgaden gewohnt.
In Russisch, aber ich denke, ich weiß nicht, ich kann nicht.
All right.
Slip into Hebrew next, if you'd like. But Chuck Walters published some of my early works after I left the Navy. I went into agriculture, became a dirt farmer, and the book I wrote was The Potential of Herbs as a Cash Crop, which became a classic up in Canada, mostly because... That's what they do up there.
Mm.
It's not much else they can do up there except farm.
Right.
Well, you know, what is it? Some of the best music came out of the central parts of Canada, and that's, you know, It's a Beautiful Day. Remember those people?
Huh.
Yeah.
Like I remember Gordon Lightfoot.
Yeah. They all came out of there. The current group out of Winnipeg right now is... Hillbilly Burlesque.
You know, I've actually heard of them.
Yeah.
And they have quite a following, I think.
Well, it's Canadian, you know.
Yeah.
It's different. A little different, like grunges for sale.
I played a Canadian band last week that I like called Blue Rodeo, actually. They've been around for quite some time, but they're sort of still cultish in a way. But
I wanted to appreciate you playing that reading by Joseph Campbell was unexpected. Mm-hmm. I wanted to set the tone with the Seattle speech that was...
Chief Seattle gave that about
land and the concept of Californians coming up to Oregon and buying land and then speculating on it. And like, we don't own land. Mm. We don't own the air. We don't own these things. We're basically stewards. That was what I started to learn when I switched from being a physicist to being a farmer.
Hmm.
I had a completely different relationship to the soil. And I would encourage people, it's not about money. It's not about growing real foods. What it's really about is having a relationship with yourself in terms of being self-sufficient, being able to eat some greens that you found yourself or, you know, some fruit that you gleaned from a tree that was going to otherwise, you know, rot. We used to, and when I was living in Yakima, we'd go down to these big piles of apples and we'd run them through a hammer mill. It makes a little bit of nuts and banana and crawl them out like cement, making fruit leather. And, you know, the gleaning possibilities here in this state are with your persimmon that I saw, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You have the possibilities of having all the foods you need locally.
Right.
And I believe that it was Gurdjieff that said you should eat your environment. There's macrobiotic reasons for that in terms of your climatization, the way your body metabolizes, those kinds of things.
Right,
but
right.
Aside from that, guess what's going to happen in the next 4 years? There's going to be some serious food shortages.
And it does seem that way.
It's important that you have a relationship to at least being able to provide enough you can trade for what you want. You know what I mean? I mean, you can trade. That's barter. That's what's going to happen. There will be the emphasis on I'm supposed to do something, and I have to, if I don't say this, I'm supposed to first say to hi to Larry in Maui, my and your webmaster.
Hello, Larry.
Hi, Larry.
Thanks for listening, my brother, as always.
Yeah. And I've got to say hi to Nick up in Alaska.
Nick Begich. Hello, Nick.
Yeah, hi, Nick.
We'll talk a little bit about some of the work that Nick's doing.
Well, he's publishing all my works now.
Right.
Nick and I are becoming really close friends. There's what I do now, and oh, yes.
Who else?
I can't forget Adele in Grants Pass for coming by and putting a smile on my face before I came here.
All right.
Ha, ha, ha.
Uh-huh. That means.
No, it's just what it meant. She came over and made me smile.
Good.
And the idea of being a postman, where I'm going from one rural community to another, trying to fine-tune you, try to look at what you've got in your mind, you know, like if you're a survivalist or a clan or whatever you are, and try to figure out what you might want to consider integrating into your overall scheme of things without changing your metaphysics. Everybody's got different places they want to go.
Mm.
And intentionality. Was that the key buzzword now?
Mm.
Yeah, belief systems. Mm-hmm. But beyond that part, there's going to be a change in everything. And I'm going to project that the United States is, in the next 6 or 8 years, will fragment into 9 basic countries, each like with Dennis Kucinich being president of this country here, predicated, and you'll choose where you want to live, predicated on how many civil rights you want to give up. Difference between Florida and Montana. And there's communes everywhere. I belong to one up in the Sandpoint, Idaho area. There's a Quaker retreat, 47 years.
Yeah.
Joe White, his protege of Frank Lloyd Wright, his roof of his bunker is where he grows his vegetables. You know, works. It's got heat. I'm currently working a project where I'm actually growing gallium and arsenic as a crop, making gallium arsenide crystals that will be our solar panels. Mm-hmm. No moving parts, no wood consciousness, no getting old too quick. You know, like, works for me.
Right.
Well, you have, just on these clips around here, I'm looking around, you probably have uranium here. And if you have uranium, you'll have gallium, and you will have arsenic. And so that's not out of the ballgame. And if you have the kinds of weather that I remember from the Midwest, solar panels are a good way to supplement your heating needs.
Yeah, I've considered that out at our place, actually, because I've at certain parts
of
the property.
Well, your pond is a treasure trove. You could actually be growing.
You get solar on that pond, too.
That's correct. You could be growing things on that pond and trading it for everybody else that had gardens.
Well, okay, well, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. We're going to talk a lot about this stuff as we get into the program, but we have a little business to attend to. And for those of you out there, this is a little difficult to see, of course, because we're on the radio, but Richard has been so kind to bring a special gift to us here. There are a number of people here in the studio that are participating, but we're going to do an absinthe ritual, something that I know very little about, but something that Richard Allen Miller knows a whole lot about. And he's going to talk to us a little bit and tell us along the way. But, Richard, how much time do you need to prepare, you think?
I've already got them ready to flame. What I need to do is I need to close the circle. Mm-hmm. That means that once we close the circle, if there's going to be someone going in and out of the door, we need to, you know, realize that they may have to break the circle. I hate breaking magic. It's all in the mind's eye. It's done. We're closed. Now we're ready. I did a banishing ritual, and I closed the circle.
All right. That's, I want to close that door, too.
Sure, that's a good thing to do. Now we've got a...
Now that we've got...
You'll be the... what do we call those guys with the arms? Oh, you're the...
Now...
The sergeant of arms. That's right. He's got the arms.
How about this? How about we do a short piece of music here, just about 2 minutes or so to set the tone a little bit, and we'll come back. Right, Rick? Sounds good?
Yes, we're good.
All right, everybody, we will be back in just 2 minutes and 22 seconds with Richard Allen Miller and a whole slew of us here in the studio, and we're going to learn a little bit about the ritual of absinthe. It's Mike Hagen, and you listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM.
Goes dry as she goes walking by. Falling twilight catches my shadow. I smile, I speak in, I catch her eye. My head knows one thing, my heart another. She smiles and speaks, and I feel alive as she goes walking, walking, walking by.
She goes walking by. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. We're getting ready to do a little bit of a absinthe ritual here with Richard Allen Miller. In fact, we're in the middle of it now, and I'm going to try to sort of, I'm going to turn Rick's mic on, too, so he can describe as he likes, because I can't see very well from my side, but it looks like he's handing me something.
Yeah.
Is that mine?
Yes, that's yours.
Okay, so the glass, for those of you who are interested, is... sort of like a short wine glass without the stem. Like if you picture a wine glass without the stem, sort of like that, and maybe a couple, 3 ounces of liquid in there. Looks sort of like
you start with 1 ounce shot of absinthe, and it's usually a 3-to-1 with cold
with
ice,
the cold
water.
Ice water. Okay.
And the colder the ice water, the better the green fairy forms. The green fairy is actually not the actual drug that forms, but with the thujone and spices. Mix with, in this case, what we're using is, I've got to stop and think about what I'm doing here. What we're using is ouzo rather than Pernod. The original formulas would use, our liqueur, by the way, let's do that right now. I don't like as much water. I like to drink it hard. And
you make it yourself.
I'm not the brewmaster. Mahala Rood. My webmaster original. She was a student of mine and then later became my teaching assistant when we went from PC Link to AOL when I set up all the occult...
All the chat rooms and all that stuff.
Right. Uh-huh. I did that for Mark.
That was years ago when AOL was just getting going.
1689.
Yeah.
And then she stayed with me for another 6 years as my teaching assistant, and then later became my webmaster, which now Larry is enjoying. And Mahala is my...
It's a great name.
Laura Croft. She's Sicilian.
Mm-hmm.
And has two shotguns. She's scary. She lives in San Antonio, Texas, and is the brewmaster. Do what thou wilt should be the whole of the law.
Love is the law.
This is the first drink of absinthe this year for me. And this is the best way to...
Am I supposed to drink it all?
Yes. Pying it down, Eddie. Just like you do it. That's a baby. Mm. Gerstone, more.
What's at the bottom of it?
Sugar.
Uh-huh.
Now, absinthe...
Okay, so I just drank the whole thing, and so did Rick, and who else is in here drinking?
You're going to be set.
Eight of us.
Okay. So we'll try to document the time.
Well, after 2 hours, when we get through our cups, we'll see where that takes it.
Yeah, it's 11:22.
Someone needs to start the ritual again with one more shot in each glass, and then caramelizing the sugar, blah, blah, blah. And use the Everclear as a way to get the sugar cube started. The sugar is dissolved in... Okay, the absinthe that we make is made with a Napoleon brandy, which uses, instead of oranges, it uses tangerines.
All right.
That's what a Napoleon brandy is. It uses tangerines. And then instead of using Pernod, okay, so that liquor content with ouzo will make it a 40% 80 proof drink.
Okay.
The stronger drinks that you're buying on the market are doing that because they are not made correctly, and they're trying to get the same high that you would get from alcohol. You know,
mm-hmm.
but what makes, I can read this as a quote, or better yet, this is something. If you read Primary Effects, mm-hmm. just read that little section on Primary Effects from my original book on aphrodisiacs.
Right, and this is, by the way, The Magical and Ritual Use of Aphrodisiacs. It was written by Richard Allen Miller when...
Late 70s, early 80s.
Early
and
80s.
Then it was published. That reprinting is 86, but, you know, I wrote it earlier. We had a third book in the series, The Perfumes. And then the fourth book I was going to write was on gemstones. It would have 18 chapters, one on for each Bravus lattice, because how crystals work is not wearing them. It's envisioning the geometry in your mind's eye. And that's based on some work we did on the diamond body. There was three books in that series called The Diamond Body, Electromagic, and Yogatronics. And what we were able to do is simulate any form of drug experience using sound and light and German acupuncture equipment where we could talk to neurotransmitters specifically on the brain. That was more work I did when I was working with Navy. We did a lot of that stuff. The University of Washington, Department of Anesthesiology is where we worked. And basically, we had labs, Livermore, Argonne. We were in China Lake. We had Stanford Research Institute. We had South Park, which was Boeing Scientific Research Labs, which was different than where I worked at Experimental Research Station in Wilmington, Delaware, for DuPont.
Mm.
That's where we started, was in DuPont, and then, of course, we moved into the deep labs. You know, I've told you this before, but when I was working military, I had Delgado, had chip implants in the lab next to me, and then... Moore was doing ketamine and telepathing and BZ studies, and you don't even want to know what I was doing. I was doing the microwave and the over-the-edge stuff because I was a physicist, and we had to catch more flies with
all
two
right.
whizzes.
Let me read a little bit from the Primary Effects here. Again, this is from Richard Allen Miller's The Magical and Ritual Use of Aphrodisiacs. Primary Effects... Narcotic analgesic affecting the cerebral cortex of the brain. It depresses the central medullary part of the brain, the area concerned with pain and anxiety.
Now, alcohols do some of that, but this is more like the thujone, when it mixes with alcohol, acts. It creates a rare narcotic that's like like marijuana, the cannabinoids, except it's more in the hallucinogenic end rather than the sedative end.
Mm.
And so as we drink these more and more, I think we'll have colors. Could be. We'll have some fun. Anyway, it's now your time to stir these in like this. You stir these in. and you're in charge of that, and then slowly pour water into it. And if you pour it in slowly, what happens is you're titrating various salts out of the essential oils from the spices that are used, and they'll carbolize or ruche or whatever the name that they call that, where you can actually smell one spice over another first as you pour the ice water in it.
Uh-huh.
That turns out to be one of the more important elements of how you're to drink this thing. It's like a Japanese tea service. It's not about the food.
It's about how it's prepared and how it's presented.
That's the ritual of it. Mm-hmm. This is the celebration of a myth. It is the difference of going from the profane into the sacred, where instead of going out and getting hammered, what you're doing is a ritual to eliminate worms in the gut. Just kidding.
Hmm.
Well, that's what this does, and why I will do it, because I don't drink alcohol. But the bottom line is, the United States is the only country. See how that's clouding? That's what they call the green fairy when it clouds like that. When it goes from that amber, transparent, to cloudiness, like just like that. And if you looked in the better light in the studio, it would have a slightly greenish hue to it, which is referred to as the green fairy. The United States is the only country in the world that doesn't have an annual deworming program. And, you know, with either gum mastic or whatever, because you realize the water we drink isn't clean. Mm. And we now know, for example, that HIV is a mycobacterial that doesn't filter, that's released from a worm in your gut. And that if in the presence of isopropyl alcohol will form HIV. But knowing that, you can kill it. You can kill it with wormwood. And that's why we're doing this little ritual today, is to get rid of our ulcers. I'm just kidding. But it will do that.
Would you talk a little bit more about the historical? You said we're reenacting a myth.
There's books that are written much better than I could elucidate on this program on the origins of this. 1840, 1830 is probably when it first started to appear in France. There are many different ways of doing it. Lautrec had his way, just like Oscar Wilde or Renoir. They each had their own ways that they wanted to ritualize this thing in France. But this was considered, during that period, the cocaine of that century. You know, it was like the leading drug. It wasn't really alcohol. It had something more to it than just getting hammered. You know, it was like there was a ritual element to it, which added a sacredness to the purpose and intentionality of what you're doing.
And that changes the experience. That changes the experience.
Well, it allows you to integrate it. That's the key. You know, getting hammered, and I'm going to go get drunk tonight so I can get sick. That's what's happening out in the streets right now. That they go out to get sick. And, that's okay. John Cougar Mellencamp put it that way. Hurts so good. But, you know, I have to say, there's Leary, my teacher, in his psychedelic experience book, you know, the varieties of said there's four reasons for getting high, and only one of them is for escape or pleasure. There's three other reasons. And if you understand your purpose, like reading that Seattle speech and then doing the Avisense, for example, we have just put a spin on what's going to be happening here in Missouri. And that's what Aleister Crowley wrote about the magical child. The magical child, that book that he wrote, was World War II. Magical children are events. They're not individuals. They're like something in space and time, right, where you've taken something from psyche and made it
and
into matter.
Real. So all events, all things are sort of children in that sense.
That's correct.
Right?
And that's why, you know, you have lots of children.
Mm.
What is that?
And why you better be damn careful what you say.
Well, or think, or, you know, remember I said in that one book, The Magical and Ritually Suburbs.
Right.
By the way, that's...
Which I have, by the way, the original...
I know, I couldn't believe it.
I know.
Yeah, that surprised me. That surprised me. You had my first mushroom book, not my Magical and Ritual Use that High Times did, but you had the first one.
See, I've been
that's
paying attention.
That's really, really...
I've
never seen any of those except in Seattle.
Uh-huh. Now you've seen one in Missouri. Now you've seen two of them.
Now I've seen one. Yeah, Tom Lytle got around, too. I know Tom Lytle, so, you know, psychedelic monographs and essays.
So Leary, the four reasons, right? The one
Well, there's three other reasons that have to do with connection with other parts of yourself. That's what we're all seeking, is union with self. You know, that's Halfway to God, and the purpose of that is to, and we just keep drinking these things down, and we just keep rolling them through until we're finished with this bottle, and then we open another one just like the other one, roll another one. No, that was a different song. Yeah. Oh, well, I forget how that works. I know, you're speechless. Give him another drink.
I'm going to have one. And let me say something here to the listeners before I get too far into our absinthe here. I need to say thanks to Sterling Allen, who was on the program last week, and we talked about alternative energy. That's an interesting program, and it's something that we can talk with Rick about later on as well. You're still blowing me away with the Toshiba, the new little pocket nuclear devices or whatever the hell they got.
The Toshibas make these new home units that you can buy for your home that will last 40 years and have no toxicity at the end of 40 years, and there's no danger with them.
And it's an atomic device that will power your home.
Yes, and your lights, car, your watch, your...
That's what I'm talking about.
Your heart center like they did in Iron Man, whatever.
Yeah, one of those. Yeah.
That's, in fact, Iron Man is what he has in his chest is what Toshiba just invented.
Right.
See how the movies... Get right there on the leading edge,
yeah.
On it.
Well, science fiction's been ahead of the game for quite some time.
That's right. Comics.
And you and I both know that there are levels of technology out there that are available that aren't available.
Only for those that could see.
That's my point.
Yeah.
Right. But if they were out there for everyone to see, we'd have a different sort of place.
That's right. Right. That's right.
So, okay, we are in the midst of absinthe now. It's moving now. We're using... How many glasses do we have going?
We only have two glasses. So if you want to bring some more glasses, then
we can get everybody snockered
earlier, faster, quicker.
Passing the glass is kind of cool, actually.
That is a ritual like the American Indian.
It's like passing a joint, in a way.
Yeah, the lit end stays in the center, and the person that has it usually is the one that bokehs it because it's the power thing. Haven't you noticed that?
That's true.
The guy that has the joint in his hand is the one that's always talking.
Yeah, it's like, come on, move it along, dude.
I noticed that. I watched that ritual.
This is the first time I've ever done this. I didn't know anything about it. I know, Scott.
How does it taste to you?
It's actually pretty good. It reminds me, certainly.
Bitter,
that,
sharp.
Yeah.
And nothing lives. No worms, nothing.
It's like a super antibiotic probably or something, right?
No, it's wormwood. Thujone. Thujone is not toxic except in large volumes. You'd have to drink.
Well, everything's toxic in large
volumes. That's correct. Well, not everything.
Water is. Salt is.
Yes.
I mean, most things...
My mushrooms aren't. They just give you the runs. But you'd have to drink 6 bottles of this before the Thujone levels would be of a level...
Right. By then, the alcohol is going to take care of it.
And you have Thujone in other things, Your juniper that you showed me growing.
Uh-huh.
Juniper berry for gin.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so Thujone exists in a lot of plants. Just like dimethyltryptamine does, huh?
Mm-hmm.
But
that's weird.
It's in
everything.
Well, that's why Trout said to me, he was editor of Ethnogen Review, he said, Rick, some plants aren't really plants. They're delivery systems from God.
Yeah.
Yeah, those cows out there chewing their cud are having close encounters.
Yeah, yeah. They. That's why they're so blissful, maybe,
Well, bovine.
The bovine bliss factor.
The bovine factor. Yeah, there you go. Actually, we're mixing transfer factor from colostrum.
Now, transfer factor, that's one of Nick Begich's products.
Well, transfer factor, yes. Yes, I didn't mean to jump ships on you like that.
No,
when you talk about bovine, what we wanted was a broad-spectrum antibiotic substitute for feedlots and cattle. We're getting the colostrum from cattle rather than from women. Transfer factor is in the woman's breast milk when she breastfeeds a child. The transfer factor is that first day that sets those enzymes up on the thing. It's called transfer factor.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're doing is we're taking that from cows and mixing it with our pharmaceutical mushrooms to create foods that are broad-spectrum antibiotic substitutes. We have some studies going on up in British Columbia and Alaska right now where we have salmon hatcheries that are rampant with disease to the point where they had to put antibiotics in to keep the salmon healthy, and like they do in Atlantic salmon. And now we're using our mushrooms and transfer factor, and now instead of having so much kill ratio on the salmon, they're yielding higher proteins, they're healthy, and it breaks down into foods. There's generally recognized as safe, GRAS, by USDA, FDA. And we're now finding that with human beings, we have a website called dogcancer.ca where we sell transfer factor with a blend of mushrooms like Nick does. Mm-hmm. Nick Begich's product is the one now a lot of the hospitals here in the Midwest are now substituting from Redoxylin Plus, which was used for Lyme's disease and hepatitis C. All the domiciliaries out in Oregon now are using our cordyceps, the hybrid form of the cordyceps.
Right,
and we've
talked
about that before. And
now, that's an amazing thing.
What we're trying to do, Nick has made a magic bullet that kills not only werewolves but vampires. What he's done is he's taken the formula that we used in Africa for you know, AIDS.
In Ghana
and Swaziland. Are we not supposed to say the countries? We'll just say Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's more precise. And what's happening is that in terms of results, it's just unbelievable what's happening. In fact, it's so exciting. We have to be very careful. And so what we do is we have prepared a new formula for dogs and humans, but not feedlot animals yet. We're not doing that direction yet. There's reasons. Some of it's political. Mm-hmm. Some of it is there's better things to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't finished the book on this.
Let me give out your websites. There are, of course, the primary one, richardallenmiller.com, and dogcancer.ca is apparently for people that need help with their animals who are sick.
Sure. Yeah, the whole thing's about rehab.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether you are a drug abuser or your dog is getting old or whatever.
Right.
We have testimonials. The website will have testimonials of individuals that had dogs with cancer that are now living. My dog lived to 18. It was a chocolate lab. Mm. Died of renal failure and was 18 years old.
Mm. That's remarkable for a lab.
Yeah. And that's, I also gave her glucosamine.
Yeah.
Well, and
you loved her and took care of her.
Yeah, it was. She was an artifact from my little girl that died of leukemia. When she died, I inherited the dog, and I decided, well, I'm going to try to keep the dog around for a while.
Mm.
And,
all right, well, I think that I want to take a little bit of a break here, play a piece of music, and we can have a little sip of absinthe in the break time here. And then I'd also like to remind everyone that we are raising money tonight on KOPN, and the phone numbers for those of you who would like to become participants and members at the station here, 573-874-5676, 1-800-895-KOPN. This is another tune from Perry Comitatus. This one is called Negril. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia.
Comitatus.
Sparkling sea, new goods changing hands, breakers rolling, changing greens, water blinding sands. Morning market spins and spins, ganja sails and rasta men, where they give the smokers liberty, where the coast road turns around. Oh, Negril, when I can't recall, come to me. Oh, Negril, when I can't recall, come to me. Mobe's coral ribbon runs inside of sea and ocean sun, ride the main line off the coastline to where the tourist girls go down. Trade winds hum and the trade winds sing. When rain becomes too cool, that ring like ya speaking out on fates unfound, all kissed in thunder sounds.
Oh, Negril,
well, I can't hear you calling. Come to me. Oh, Negril, well, I can't. Come to me, come, 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 come to me, come, 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 come to me, come, 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 come to me, come, 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 come
Comitatus. Another wonderful piece of music there. That one is called Negril. All music from a CD that's called Kindred Sith. And I'm not sure when it's going to be available. Pretty soon, probably on CD Baby, within the next week or two. But I'll put a link up on my music page like I always do. And after the fact, you guys can go check it out if you like. But anyway, great stuff from Mick Watts. And I appreciate the music. Thank you, my friend. Richard Allen Miller, of course, in the studio with me. With a whole bunch of other folks, and there's lots of conversation sort of going on around me.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's all right. I was
talking to someone else, and we were getting in a Sufi question here.
I was trying to decide if I was going to try to pick up on that or not. But
it doesn't matter. Whatever you want to go, Mike.
Well, I want to talk more about absinthe since we still got it.
Cool.
When and how were you introduced to this ritual?
When I wrote Magical and Ritually Superbs. When I first did that, wormwood was one of the 28 herbs that I wrote about ritual forms so that we kept them out of the Uniform Control Substance Act.
Right, we've talked about that before.
Right.
So
and then the aphrodisiac book was how to have louder and longer orgasms.
but the FDA or whoever were out to get wormwood as well. That was on the list.
Well,
too, huh?
they caffeines, you know, your colonut, your guarana, those are all in my books.
Mm-hmm.
And Mormon tea, you know, which was pseudoephedrine hydrochloride.
Right.
And
psilocybin.
Well, psilocybin, that's why psilocybin is not illegal to grow it.
Right.
But it's illegal to extract the psilocin or psilocybin.
Or to distribute it.
That's, or sales.
Or sell it.
That's correct.
Right.
But it's not illegal to grow it.
To grow it. Or
to eat it.
That's correct.
In fact, the laws are very explicit on that, even though the DA might try to get you to... so that they can make the bust.
Right.
But the problem is, if you know the laws, which I do, because I've had Schedule 1s where I grew narcotics for the government. And what we used to do is, these were drugs that were legal. You know, they're like they grow in the garden.
Right.
And what I didn't feel that anybody should have a ruling on that kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm. If like it grows out of the ground.
Well, it grows in your neighborhood. That's why ibogaine was never studied at first. I have a very interesting story about iboga.
That's an African...
it's a vine that grows in Africa that Lotsoff discovered that would... it's my turn. Michael?
Uh-huh,
cheers, buddy.
All right.
Here.
Salud.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God.
Oh. That was a nice...
Oh, this is getting better.
Yeah, have you noticed that? And guess what else? I just got a little buzz. I mean, I got a secondary light source.
All right, so we got 2 hours and 12 minutes of this radio program left.
Medic!
This is going to get pretty interesting, I have a feeling.
Yeah, especially when we get into our cups.
Yeah, that's the second time is a little bit more.
The reason that alcohols have been banned in a lot of the Sufi and other traditions was that it would cloud the mind for meditation. That would be the excuse for not being able to do it. Not that it's against the law, because I'm an outlaw anyway. I don't break the law, which means I'm not a criminal.
Just outside of the law.
Well, I like to urinate outside my house. I don't want to have to go inside, and you can only do that in the country.
That's right.
That's why people live in the country, because they're outlaws. There you go.
That's right.
That worked pretty good. Everybody got that picture?
Well, you also, if you're outside of town, you also see what's coming in first.
Well, that's the theory. But when Merlin said it, when Arthur threw the sword in the lake, I didn't see that. I didn't see that. Well, there you go. It's about the idea that sovereignty is being lost. And the Greek had a word for it called autark, which is supreme individual sovereignty. This means that, like Gurdjieff, if you went through, like I did, the Bennett School of Gurdjieff, mm-hmm. the first thing you do when you enter the school, you have to make your fork. So you got something to eat with. Huh. You know, like you start with basics. And the fundamentals of how do you prepare your food? How do you skin that deer and make it so it doesn't taste gamey and blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. You know, the reality of the physical plane of it part. And
right. I mean, so many people are removed from that. I mean, people,
they have no clue.
You know, they walk into the grocery store and think food comes the
rice,
from the safety
The rice famine in Indonesia is the tip of what's going to happen with the oil prices and the rest of it. Watch this next month. What happens at Safeway stores and the quality of the food, how much is available on the shelf, and
the price of it.
Yeah.
Now, you and I spoke a little bit earlier about this today. I have, you know, two kids, and they drink a lot of milk, and they eat a lot of eggs, and a lot of cheese, and that sort of stuff that, you know, is the everyday stuff. And let me tell you, it's gone up. It's probably doubled in price in the last 12
months.
Check
out bananas. That's a good one.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
here's the bottom
all
line.
All fruits, for sure.
All your cities, including Columbia right now, you have only about 50 days of food in this town. What would happen if we had an event, you know, like on the movies, there's an event and we all of a sudden lost communication with everyone else in the world and there's nothing out. What would happen to this town after 50 days?
I don't know. I mean,
you will have the kinds of danger riots. You know, when people are hungry, it's a whole different matter than when they're angry because of politics and other things like that.
That's true. I had somebody say, or somebody wrote to me on my forum, they said, the average American is four meals away from murder. In other words, they'll go three. Most people will go without three meals, but when you get to that fourth meal, they say, man, I'm about ready to do anything to get that fourth meal.
And
so
yet,
it's frightening how many people may be close to that
yet,
sort of thing.
It was the ox. It was God that told the ox god that man needed to eat only once every third day, and the ox god got it wrong, and he said he needed to eat three times a day, which is nine times more food than the body, when it's tuned correctly, needs to metabolize. Page two on that. If that's true, well, then that's no wonder that everyone's overweight and sick, because we are eating processed foods. Where I'm not even going to go into the GMO problems, but in terms of the importance or in defense of eating real foods.
Right.
It's an omnivore's dilemma. It's what's happening is
an omnivore's dilemma. That's a great way to put it.
Well, it's a dilemma. That's a title of this new book.
Oh, it's a great choice.
Yeah, that's an old title. And the new book, the author, he wrote The Omnivore's Dilemma.
A great choice.
And his latest book, it's on the bestseller list. I can't remember the guy's name. is In Defense of Real Food. It's on the net. You can find it anywhere. And it's excellent. It's talking about eating just things you grow yourself, eating locally. That's the most important thing. You know, everything that we eat, all our fruits, you know that berries that we had for lunch today?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Those were not from Missouri. They were not from California, and they were not.
They may have been Maine Squeeze. Does Maine Squeeze get there?
Well, I don't think so, because, like right now, where do they get their strawberries? All your strawberries are coming in from Peru, for example.
Yeah.
Bananas. Where did those bananas that we're eating in there, where did they come from?
Yeah,
they didn't come from California. That's not mine.
Right.
That's yours.
And they didn't come from here, that's for sure.
Well, that's what I'm trying to say.
Right.
We're not eating local and regional. And that would probably be the first postulate or rule of the road, is begin to go to your farmers' markets, begin to eat more locally, and to spend more time with the local growers in some kind of a swap thing where you're making them... You know, you had some pretty nice-looking oak on your land, right?
Mm-hmm.
Planetary grade. Man, if you got an Alaskan mill, I can show you how to mill that up for a king.
Well, there's one of the young ladies that's in the studio with us tonight works at one of the local natural food store, I guess is a good way to put it. Is that what you call Clovers, natural foods? But
cool.
But there's a lot of locally grown produce and stuff that gets sold there and at the farmer's
market. If you
broadcast
that as your primary thing, that you didn't get anything from outside of the region, you could make national news, and that could be walking the talk and showing others how you do it. Good luck. I was part of Growing Family in Seattle, you know, with Puget Consumer Co-op and all of that. It's not that easy to get your grains and your other kinds of things, you know, that you're using for your breads, and who baked the breads and where were they baked and blah, blah, blah. And that's the other part of that book I was talking about. They talk about now to avoid processed foods, including grains. There's the metabolism. We're now discovering that that's where eating that slice of bread is not that good for you. You know, whereas, and grains, you know, that there are other kinds of nuts, you know, and other kinds of local products that you could be eating. I saw burdock. I saw burdock everywhere here. And I remember when I was in Hong Kong, that was what they ate there was burdock. I mean, that was like, oh, that looks right. And it's just, do you understand what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
There's all kinds of foods here locally that people don't even notice.
They don't consider foods.
They don't see them as foods. And for me, those greens like the dandelions, you've got dandelions everywhere. Dandelion greens are some of the best greens in a salad you could possibly imagine. You get some radish greens in there, and now you've got a killer salad just with radish and dandelion without anything else. High iron. You've got your watercress out of the different creeks here. You start making a cool salad. You could be adding different kinds of sprouts, not just, you know, you could be doing all kinds of sprouting. That's what we used to do when we were up in the mountains. We used to do a lot of sprouts and things. We'd deliver them to all the people around the different farms, and they would give us the cheese or whatever they were producing on their farms. That's how it's going to go in 4 years. There's going to be more of a barter.
Right.
It isn't going to be about money.
Right.
Gold isn't going to buy you health.
Yeah, you can't,
and that's going to be what is the single most important commodity there is going to be health. And you start with what you eat. Of course, what you eat is also your words, your visual eyes. All of that goes into you and makes you.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it interesting that everything you eat becomes you? Pretty cool, huh? Yeah. Take anything and kind of make it into my body. And, you know, but that is a metaphor that I've always... What are you looking for? We're passing Abyssins around to a bunch of loady toads here, and they're going to all get shit-faced. Just kidding.
Yeah.
I thought I'd do that one.
I like it.
A little subtle NLP there, and everybody got it.
How about it?
Hey, I really feel that it's time everybody starts gardening a little bit.
Mm.
That's what we used to do at Growing Family. We had a big farm right out behind Future Consumer Co-op where we were pulling our squash and some of our heirloom stuff that we were growing. It was kind of cool that way. This is back in the early 70s when, you know, Seattle was not a big city at all. It was a little tiny town, and nobody knew about it because Microsoft didn't exist, and Boeing hadn't gotten into being a big airline at that time. It was still small. Seattle was kind of a cool place to grow up.
I bet. That's where you spent your childhood?
Yeah, I went to high school there, and that works, right?
Yeah, that works.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'll chat for a minute and tell people it's KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM, Mid-Missouri source for in-depth news, diverse talk, and a world of music. It is closing in on midnight now on the 5th of May, just a few days past Beltane, and new moon tonight. We're doing our absinthe ritual on a new moon. I don't know if that was planned or not.
No.
You know, he says he doesn't plan it, but
well,
you know,
that's the flowing part of it. You know, things happen synchronistically, and how you connect the dots, that's the aha part of your lysergic acetamides in the brain.
And these are endogenous chemicals we're talking about. We're not talking about LSD.
No, we're talking about brain chemistry, not LSD.
Yeah, things that are in everybody's...
Lysergic acetamides are the aha part of creativity.
Explain that a little bit further. What do you mean?
Well, there's, you know, dimethyltryptamine is the part of the brain in the occipital region of the cerebral cortex that has to do with giving you a sense of God. We create God in our brain. It's not real. God's real. Let me backtrack that.
Yeah.
Our sense of something more, our sense of God, that all comes from dimethyltryptamine in the brain. Now, that may be how God talks to us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that part, I haven't worked that part out.
I understand.
Okay, but that's the part that gives you that sense of something more.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the lysergic acetamides in the brain that give you the ability to connect one dot to another. And that is your non-local mind, because that's where you take an imagination and you make it into the physical world. And that part is where psyche becomes matter. And that is lysergic acetamide. Dr. John Curtis Gowan,
is this the Finnish?
Northridge.
Oh, Northridge, okay.
Right, he was in Northridge. He got a Nobel Prize on that one work on the development of the psychedelic individual, and it had nothing
to do with drugs.
Mm-hmm. It was the enlightenment of your own personal self and how you generated that. That's one of the things I have. I have an excessive amount of lysergic acid amides in my brain, and so I'm able to go... more frequently.
Right. Well, so that's sort of the epiphany thing when people get like when Einstein.
Well, Crowley called it aha. That was the book he wrote.
Right?
Aha.
Yeah, the aha moment.
Uh-huh. That mm-hmm. moment of seeing how it could connect.
Mm-hmm.
Now you got to understand that that part is arbitrary. How this dot and that dot form this line is strictly a function of the imagination, and that's why I would say that imagination is reality. That's why we have different kinds of brain chemistries, are to give us these different memes, if you will, these mm-hmm. different ways of looking at the same thing. You know, is it physical? Is it emotional? Is it intellectual? Is it archetypal? Leary had 8 neurologic circuits they used, and mm-hmm. these are what we call memes, because it is a way we take a holographic universe and quantize it like we would water. You know, water is an essence. But when you put it in a glass, now it's no longer water. It's something different than water in its truest essence. It's containerized. That's what a word does. Mm. When we put a word to something, we have containerized it. Now, we can use it as a tool, but it has also taken it from its essence.
From its original.
Right.
Yeah.
To illusion.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the same thing is true with the brain chemistries. These are the parts that make the difference of all our different ways of understanding or relating to a given situation. Because I have to say this, and most people don't get it, but a physical event is identical to an emotional event. It's just your subconscious relates to it differently. That's why dreams are not about what happened in the dream. What they're about is how you felt about the dream.
Isn't there a particular part of neurology that they call mirror neurons? Chris and I have actually had conversation about this, where a viewed experience or a perceived experience is actually registered in the brain as if it actually was
memory.
A physical
experience. Yeah, the register part, you know, where you make an entry
mm-hmm.
in the brain. That has to do with duration and the way we categorize an experience from its start point, like our ritual. As opposed to the radio station when we started the program,
mm-hmm.
we have different trigger points that we begin and end the ritual. That's what the ritual is about. That's why we do rituals. This is the way memory works. It is...
pattern recognition.
What's that? Pattern recognition
right,
is part of that. There is a whole series of different computer forms that we use in the way we set up a signal processing center. That was why when I did the video feedback books I did, we were able to create drug experiences just using sound and light. I can do almost anything, including LSD, with just electrical pulses on your body and light and sound. That, in fact, will be the next century's forms of drugs.
Mm.
We call cymatics the ability, like the heart, is a sound wave in an electromagnetic field outside the body, and then as we chunk it into the body, into the more physical plane, it becomes a physical heart with a pump on it. It relates to Schumann's resonance and blah, 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 blah. You know, it does all these different kinds of things, but really...
Damn, I'm drinking more of this absinthe.
It's pretty good, isn't it? And this is considered the best one in the world. Actually, there are different forms of absinthe, and this particular one that Mahala brews is actually considered... probably one of the finest in the world. And you'll notice that you're slightly getting a nod, and I've only had, what did I have, 2 of them?
Well, I want to thank you for sharing it with us, first of all.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure.
And teaching us a little bit about it.
Well, see, this is going to be my logo. When I do workshops around the country now, when I start doing my ESP things like Sedona, I'm going to have private rituals. Instead of having little bunny orgies or weird things that other speakers do, what I'm going to have is an absinthe ritual, and where I act as your absinthe professor.
Huh.
And now I pass the wand on to you, and now you got to go teach a whole bunch of people.
Well, I've had 3 of them, and it ain't like a beer or a glass of wine.
No, you're feeling a slightly...
Yeah, it's not just alcohol.
No, it isn't.
For sure.
That's exactly correct. And
because there's not that much alcohol in it, first of all.
Well, there's 80 proof.
Yeah, but still, that's not...
No, it's not 120.
Not a whole
lot. Like,
and I'm a guy who can drink a few beers and not, you know. It's different than that, for
sure. Guava, Jose
Cuervo. And I like scotch. I'm sort of a scotch drinker. I mean, I don't drink a lot of it, but I have. And it ain't like that either. So, And they make all kinds of different... people have their own recipes for this, sort of like they do of all things.
That was a good one, man. I warmed it all the way down. Yeah, I watched all those worms die. That H. pylori, goodbye.
H. pylori.
Yeah,
little one. It
goodbye.
And
okay, we got to talk about boiling the frog. The correct way to get rid of ulcers is to boil the frog. Boiling the frog is a... I got that again from Mahala. There you go, girl.
That's a cultural sort of...
No, she got that from
too.
Rolling Thunder. She studied with...
Where is Mahala?
She's at San Antonio, Texas. Shotguns, side saddle, you know. That girl, she's a Sicilian. She lives in San Antonio. And she's a Renaissance woman. I'm going to dedicate one of my books to her. I think she's probably one of the... She does all my PowerPoints for Nexus Magazine and things like that. When I go to Amsterdam and I blow people away, that was Mahala's art. So, well, it was. She's a really good artist. Anyway, she is a brewmaster. And my daughter wanted to make a cordial. I wanted to make an alcoholic thing, aphrodisiac, using Damiana. And my daughter then decided that now she's going to go back to college.
What's Damiana? That's another herb?
Damiana is a shrub that grows in Mexico, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll find that in Lewis Culling's Secret Order of the GBG, Sex Magic Rituals. They use Damiana as an aphrodisiac. That's in my aphrodisiac book. I talk about that. What's that?
It's in my cupboard. Right?
Of course it's in your cupboard.
Yeah, most of these things are just around somewhere, it turns out.
Good girl.
Out.
Now we're getting them right. Yeah. You know, I would have been bashed if I'd said good girl in Oregon, because that is a racist comment.
Oh, or a sexist.
Well, Oregon is a halfway place for battered women. And like Castro Street is in California. Well, I have to tell you, Oregon has got a bunch of battered women that aren't gay, but that's where they end up going. There's halfway houses that move them from Ashland into Eugene and then up to Portland. Mm. And that's a big deal in Oregon. Secret, another little dug-in camps ideal I interface with. But there's a lot of battered women in Oregon, and men don't get it. You know, they don't know how to touch a woman like a woman would touch a woman. And it isn't about being gay. Mm. James Hillman wrote about that. His book, Animus, which is quite definitive on that. Actually, James Hillman has an exceptionally good book out now called The Soul's Code, In Search of Character and Calling. Hmm. I strongly recommend it. Yeah. His background is, of course, coming from the same as my own with Esther Harding and Women's Mysteries and the Eleusinian Mysteries aspects. I write about some of that with my ex-wife and I do in
Iona, yeah.
Yeah. She's
another very interesting woman.
Yeah. She's called the Spy Whisperer. She's hanging out with some very strange people right now. And
aren't we all?
Yeah. Well, who was that, man? When the hell was that? When the hell was that?
I wonder how many times people say that about you and me and whoever.
Well, you know, we're edgy. That's what Navy always liked about us. They always chose the edgy people because we're outside the box. That's your voice of coyote and voice of reason. I'm not drinking this down as quickly as I need to.
Oh, man.
What did I just say?
What language was that? Hey, let me...
Babble.
You know, there's a whole bunch of people that are listening online that are in the chat room and that are saying hello. And
cool.
So hello to everybody there in the chat room. Hello to everybody listening to us over the traditional airwaves on KOPN or over the Internet, however you choose to listen to the program, whether it's live or through the podcast, from the archives, whatever. Thanks for listening to the program. And I will tell you once again that we are trying to raise a little bit of money. And I have a couple books, as a matter of fact, too. I have two copies of The Modern Alchemist, a wonderful book written by Richard Allen Miller, of course, my guest here in the studio with me tonight. And that's a great book, Rick, and I've told you that before, but, man, awesome book.
It's used right now as a graduate textbook up in a couple of universities up in basically what The Modern Alchemist is.
Yeah, tell people a little bit about that book.
It's a 14th century alchemical text written by a Christian mystic called Lamsprink. And what I did is I translated the old German into English, and one of the woodcuts, and then there were like a bunch of woodcuts that then took Joel Radcliffe, my very good friend at Ars Obscura in Seattle, took him 7.5 years to render into pen and ink. And basically, one would be The Stag and the Unicorn and the Forest Go, Soul and Spirit are Within Matter. And then I would add psychological commentary on the Union of Opposites. Mm-hmm. And so basically, the Jungian, the Modern Alchemist is a book of definitions. The second book in that series is called Pantheon, Archetypal Gods in Daily Living. And that book has got, you got it, 22 chapters. There are 22 basic myths in the big city. And if you can recognize what particular myth that you're working with, well, you know how it's going to end, and whether or not that's the way you want it to end or not. Hmm. Book on Tarot. And then the subsequent 20, set of...
22 cards in the primary Tarot deck?
They're paths. They're called paths, okay. You know. And like Psyche at the Well.
Hmm.
You know, those kinds of things where... And Hermes, for example.
Thoth?
Hermes is, you know, your magician, number one card, not the Fool, which is different. And Hermes is your translator. It's like if I went to Greece, Hermes would be the person I hired. What are you doing over there, Michael?
Just my inhaler.
I'll bet it was. We sack as hackadacks. And with that, basically, Hermes is the guy you would hire to do your translations if you were in Greece. He's not the message. He's the translator.
Mm.
And so what would be Hermes in your body? Be a neurotransmitter. And so what we did is we do the four planes on each of these things to give you physical analogs as a way to integrate these archetypal myths in your personal life so that you are more enriched. You know, she asked, a friend here asked, one of the girls asked what a shaman is.
Hmm.
A shaman is a psychically unstable person that receives a call to religious life. And as a result, that period usually goes into a period of solitude or retreat, you know, like in the desert, you know, that horse with no name. I've been on that horse. And I know that place. I've been there. I've done that. And they reemerge with the power, real or assumed, of passing at will into states of mental dissociation. I could place my consciousness like an astral projector. I could place it in that crow and then see what the crow saw. The problem with the shaman is that he doesn't return with any memory of what he did. And that's why Gowan, who got a Nobel Prize for this, on his ontology of mystical states, talked about trance, art, and creativity. You have your prototaxic, parataxic, syntactic modes of consciousness. And the syntactic modes of consciousness, not art, you know, which has to do with dreams and ritual, which is what we're doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
Syntactic modes would do with sex magic, tantric yoga, and biofeedback, where you learned how to physically control. One of the lodge things that I had to do once was, from my initiation, one of my early initiations, was that I had to sit naked in deep snow and melt 1 foot of snow around me. I had to generate my body temperature using biofeedback techniques where I could heat my body up and literally sit in the snow and melt the snow. Now, that anybody can do that. In fact, it's a real simple thing to do, learn how to do it, because to increase your body temperature means you're changing your blood circulation and flow.
Mm-hmm.
And the way you do that is by relaxing. That means you feel the sun. You don't feel the sun, you feel the heat of the sun. It's a passive thing, and that's how you get rid of migraines and other kinds of things like that. You learn how to control autonomic functions in your body. That's the first stage toward moving toward enlightenment, because you have control. Yes, I
yeah.
know.
You know, I grew up in Buffalo, and I learned that during the wintertime.
Well, hold on, Mark, grab that microphone. What is it, Mike? Talking to that.
Hello.
Okay, ask your question.
I just finished it.
I grew up in... Wow, that was sort of creepy.
Thank you. I grew up in Buffalo, New York, where it was like extremely cold in the winter, and I realized when I was probably about 20 that it was easier to let it wash through you, like the cold, than fight it, and then you weren't cold anymore.
And it's a passive thing rather than an active thing. To lower your temperature. And anybody in this room can lower or raise any part of their body by a minimum of 8 degrees. That is a technique done in early stages of biofeedback. I set up the Menninger Foundation. I did in Topeka. I'd worked with Elmer Green. We did Jack Schwartz out of Portland. And that was one of the things I did for Navy. And we discovered that, you know, part of being martial arts was to be able to control pain and, and other kinds of things with your mind. Mm-hmm. It turns out that the Tai Chi that I learned, what Tai Chi, the Sifu that I studied with out of Victoria, taught at Dr. Beth Steers in Naturopathic School of Medicine in Seattle. We took Tai Chi upstairs in the early 50s and 60s. Well, he taught it as a martial art where breathing, which is the first and last thing you do, you can change your perception of time. Because as Robert Ornstein said, time is a duration of consciousness, which means that it's the way you store memory. It has nothing to do with the now and the moment. And the moment is where all of it is, right at this very... Oh, God, that was the last good drink on that episode. Yeah. You know, it got me. And that place is what we all seek as sacred. That moment where it's timeless. Like in lovemaking, where there's no sense of time anymore, it's like the moment or the now. And that place, that's where it's all at. That's what we all seek in our normal, everyday, mundane lives. And it has to do with where you set up resonance in your brain. Because where we all currently enjoy this movie called, what I call Horror on Elm Street, it's possible to change the movie.
Well, I think this is a big part of at least the work that that I see coming out from you is headed towards that, is to try to help people do that. I mean, we've been talking...
That's why I'm called the postman.
Right.
I go from one rural community bunker to another, and I try to fine-tune them on the different parts of survival. That's what I am, a survivalist. And IQ is a measure of your survival coefficient. That's all IQ is. It's how quickly... Can you adapt
to a changing environment?
There you go. Mm-hmm. And that's what's happening next,
boy,
brothers and sisters.
I mean, for people out there, I mean, even the dullest among us, I mean, have to be recognizing that, you know, business as usual is sort of off the table.
I'm feeling good. I'm starting to glow. I'm thinking I'm glowing.
You are, as a matter of fact.
No.
And maybe that's just me.
Exactly correct. She got it. She hit a nail on the forehead.
Anyway, I just it seems pretty obvious that things are changing and that...
That's right. I started to mention something that was really kind of important also. I started talking about the voice of coyote and the voice of reason.
Yeah.
Okay, we talk about belief systems, but beliefs and our belief systems should be used like a pair of tools. I have a pair of bell bottoms I'm never going to throw away. I mean, I'm never going to fit in them again, but I'll be damned if I'm ever going to throw those bell bottoms away, because they're something that's really important to me is who I am. Well, that's what a belief is, and some of them come to us from prenatal and natal situations that we don't even have any kind of... Yeah, I mean, you know, Steve Gaskins wrote about that Monday night class, and then he went into his spiritual midwifery before he formed
the
farm.
Yeah, that's the whole business of limbic imprints and all that
stuff.
That's
correct.
Right.
And the thing is, what we need to do is be able to step back and witness our behaviors so that we can pick and choose what's appropriate for a given situation. And that part takes... the ability to move to a different brain and part of the brain. See, I'm starting to stutter a little bit. The voice of coyote is the one that tells me to take the drug that night. And the voice of reason says, no, I got to work tomorrow morning. I can't do that. I don't want to get high and blow off the whole thing. And the voice of coyote is when you step outside the box, you're not safe with your belief systems. And you're taking, you have doubt, should I have done this? And that's where all personal growth occurs. And so it's a dialogue between voice of reason and voice of coyote. And the important thing is to learn how to distinguish between these two voices. Keep a diary, Ira Progoff. Keep a diary, your magical memory, Crowley. Keep a diary because your memory is a confabulation. Confabulation. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
You're getting the idea.
I need another
one of those words. But I have told him, animism and totemism are when you identify with a spirit that's in the woods. This is traditional for witchcraft, which American Indian is a form of witchcraft. It's a type of place where you identify. My totem is orca. Hmm. I was coastal Indians. And I love orca as a probably a more evolved entity than I am.
Well, look
and
at
so,
the brain. I mean,
well, it's got a three. Yeah, it's twice the size. It's conscious. It's but orca has a biosphere that's 10 times bigger than man. That means when there's some changes on Earth, orca is going to be a higher survivor. And that's what I fashion on. Some people like dolphin. Dolphin is another one. All these cetaceans are pretty cool animals.
Oh,
you know, they're
man.
Bigger brained. And,
yeah, and they've been
somehow,
around for a long time.
Well, they might be more superior than we are in some ways. I don't
maybe
know
that's
that.
Why they're where they are.
Well, now,
you know, if you ever scuba dive, you realize that the underwater world is, I mean, it's a beautiful place, and if you could live there in zero gravity.
I have actually done Dolphins Plus. I've been to, you know, the Key Largo where they have a rehab center,
uh-huh.
and I spent like 7 hours with Cosmo and several other dolphins, and I personally felt when I was with these dolphins that I was in the presence of something more evolved than man, technically.
Mm-hmm.
They knew, for example, this wasn't, you know, one of the things they did is they had both dolphins come up to me, and I would grab both fins, not just one fin,
uh-huh.
and they would pull me through the water. And Cosmo knew that my left arm wasn't real, knew that probably from sonar,
mm-hmm.
but knew to pull me differently than the other dolphin
that's
did.
That's amazing.
Well, and the trainer didn't have a clue.
Right.
You know, he wasn't.
Yeah, the trainer. Like, that's
well, they had a trainer that was blowing whistles and telling the dolphin when to pull me and whatever,
right.
whatever, you know. But the dolphin were different in that regard.
What do you let me ask you a question with regard to the cetacean general. I mean, the idea that they have, you know, frontal lobes, you know, a higher brain.
They're different brain. Their right. brain is actually structurally different. Their cerebral cortex, while is bigger than man, is also shaped differently.
So
there's a lot of possibilities of what that means and implies. I don't know that
right.
part. What I do know is that when I was brought into the labs by Carl Sagan, when I went into John Lilly's labs, I was the whiz kid they used. I recognized the form of language was clicks and whistles was a form of Clifford algebra. It's dimensional math.
Mm-hmm.
Their redundancy in transmitting information was it's 10 times more efficient than our Hebrew,
well,
which is
yeah,
more
which
efficient language than anything.
Any other on Earth,
well, yeah, Avram Moles wrote a book called, he's a mathematician, French, wrote a book called Aesthetic Perception and Information Theory, where he talks about Hebrew. And Hebrew being a more efficient language than, you know what I mean? Get
mm-hmm.
it? You know, the English language, we have a lot of redundancy in the way we say things.
Well, it's an older language. It seems that they would get more.
More than that, it has gematria.
Yeah,
and
has
gematria
yeah.
means numerology.
Sacred
it means
numbers.
That it has other things where you can relate two unrelated words and find commonality through gematria so that you could find how they relate to each other. Now, that's Liber 7-7, Sefer Sephira in the Bible. That was a Bible that was part of the Jewish tradition that used gematria as a form of words to communicate. This was the extension of getting out of Babel and all that kind of thing. But with that, that's Hebrew. And the Hebrew language now has evolved down into, what is it, Yiddish and all the rest of it. But the old Hebrew, and before even the Greek, the Greek, for example, that's another language that's really interesting. The Greek have four words for love, and yet, in English, we only have one word. It's eros, philo,
agape.
And telema.
Yeah.
And telema was what Crowley called thelema.
Thelema.
Telema.
Uh-huh.
It's the love of will. Now, that's a chapter in one of my new books on the difference between free will and true will. The idea that we don't have really free will, because to have free will, you would have to have full disclosure of what's going on with aliens, government, whatever.
And,
you know,
and real freedom.
Well, that's what it implies,
right.
is full disclosure.
Right.
And we don't have full disclosure.
Right.
We don't have the awareness
right.
for full disclosure.
There are certain things that we cannot do or cannot
do. Now, going back to her question and position on shamanism, shamans in Gowan's ontology of mystical states, was in the trance place to be compared with automatic writing, to be compared with a variety of other kinds of places where the information is coming through you, but you're not sure how you got it.
Mm.
In trance, in art states, that consciousness of awareness of where the information coming is slowly, mythically, dreams, art, and ritual. Whereas in syntactic modes, you're doing it with full conscious awareness. Tantric sex, for example, tantra, the thought that occurs at the moment of climax, and to form a ritual around creating a magical child with that kind of impact where you take psyche directly into matter and make it physical. Now that is what we're all destined toward once we achieve more spiritual enlightenment. Mm-hmm. Gowan talks about 8 jhana states. These are the psychedelic states of union with God. You know that cosmic consciousness thing that we hit?
Mm-hmm.
There's 8 different levels of that in the old Bordeaux Tadal. They don't talk about just cosmic consciousness. There's 8 different levels of relationship to that, again with the memes. And this part is where Gowan's material, when I taught shamanism, I taught magic is an art form. It is the art of changing consciousness at will. And I may, hopefully, this is what I'm aspiring toward, is to be Sorcerer Supreme, the one that changes literal reality as a physicist. I'm going to suggest that magic is a higher form of physics. It is used by the real people and Aborigines and some of the other people that are Hopi, that are able to do things we cannot, because there is a mystery school in the aspect of the physics. There is a part of it's not important to know how it works, to have it work. A woman driving an automobile uses magic as an art form because she doesn't think about how the internal engine combustion is working. What happened to the absinthe? Everybody stopped drinking.
Hey.
What does that mean?
Well, do we need more ice water?
And, well, that's right. Oh, we need more ice water. Okay.
We can get more ice. We're going to take a break here in a few minutes, so we'll get some more ice.
But what I was going to say is the woman doesn't know how an internal engine combustion works, but she knows that if she takes that key...
Or the man might not know how it works.
Or any of us.
Yeah.
But if you take the key and you do a certain ritual form with it, you have expectations of a reality that comes out of that.
Yeah.
That is anthropologically called magic. And basically, magic was referred to the ultra elite of Europe for centuries. And it was only this last century when it was associated with drugs, which is a proper form of magic, by the way, was that it fell in disrepute with mm-hmm. Aleister Crowley and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is, magic is in fact a higher form of physics and is probably how we unite the mind and the body back together again where Descartes separated us.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I see my role and what I'm doing here is to somehow add that numinous element
mm-hmm.
that Carl Jung talked about, that part that all of us allows us to go beyond the shaman.
Well, you hit on something, and I want to mention it now, and then I want to expand on it after the break. But I want to say it now so that we don't forget, because I'm going to drink some absinthe at the break. This idea of creating our own reality, and the idea that an individual, i.e., you or me or Mick or our lady friends in the corner or Angela or whoever, if they get it right, can change the world.
Well, Crowley would have said, you already got it right, because what you do is your true will.
Mm.
Do what thou wilt should be the whole of that law.
Mm-hmm.
Do what thou wilt should be the whole of the law. Love is the law. Love under will.
All right, that's a good place to take a break. Richard Allen Miller on the web, richardallenmiller.com. My name is Mike Hagan. Mike Hagan, HAGAN.com, KOPN.org. Hey, if you want to donate some money, by the way, you know, get on with it, all right? Please call us or at 800-895-KOPN, 573-874-5676, or email me. The best, most of my listeners are digitally inclined, so rather than call on the telephone, send me an email sometime after the fact here, and I will give you instruction on how to make a pledge and how to help out Radio Orbit and KOPN. All right, once again, it is time to play a piece of time to play a piece of music here, Perry Comitatus. This is called, I'm going to take a nice long break here. This one's called Green's Farm Road. Back in a few, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia.
Crow calls blackly, cold gray dawn, mist hangs in the trees. Day breaks grayly through the fog as it rolls in off the sea. But in my mind, the sitting where I'm at, where the sunlight shines like silver on the flat. Prairie wind blowing, engine roaring, and I'm driving out the impulses I can't ignore, and my soul is singing. September sky blue and clear as a bell, the image rings. When I close my eyes, if I listen well, I can still hear her sing. Come festival time, we load up the truck and away we'd go. Top of our lungs, we'd sing all the way there, didn't need a radio. We'd celebrate the end of summer where a thousand fires lit up the grove. Didn't need much except each other, and in my mind I'm flying home down Green's Farm Road. And in my mind, I'm flying home down Green's Farm Road. When the heat came, we sat on the porch at the house where the trains went by. She sang the old songs, I played the guitar, and we'd harmonize. When the trains got so loud that the noise from their wheels echoed all around, kept right on singing, and I tuned my guitar to that lonesome sound. We'd celebrate the end of summer where a thousand fires lit up the grove. Didn't need much except each other, and in my mind I'm flying home down Green's Farm Road. And in my mind I'm flying home down Green's Farm Road. Celebrate the end of summer where a thousand fires lit up the grove. Didn't need much except each other, and in my mind I'm flying home down Green's Farm Road. And in my mind flying home down Green's Farm Road.
Perry Comitatus. That one is called Green's Farm Road, appropriately so, because there's a green fairy running around this room, and maybe the green fairy lives on a green farm. The naked green fairy.
Yeah. Get her.
She's good looking. She's quick, though.
Oh.
Hard to catch. My guess,
like the Green Flash.
The green, maybe that's why the Flash was green in the comics, right?
No, that was Kodo.
Oh, well. Good try, anyway. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My guest is Richard Allen Miller. On the web at richardallenmiller.com and dogcancer.ca. And what's Northwest Botanicals?
Once more, yeah. NWBotanicals.org
right.
is my primary.
Yeah.
And there's lots of walkabouts there because there's nooks and crannies. Try the vault.
Oh, yeah, there really are.
They're under events, you know, on the road with Rick will be where you find the streamed. And there's an article on there my ex-wife wrote called I Married the Wizard of Oz. That's a good one.
It is good, actually. Yeah, well, I posted that a while back.
She works CIA counterintelligence with Latrell, so she's a weird person.
Well, I tell you what, this is
diva.
Strange.
Diva, that's the right word, diva.
Yeah, that's what she'd like
that's
to be called.
Right.
Better not call her the wrong name.
Oh, by any other name, she was from the Selma cartel.
Mm, there you go.
That's the pot growers out in Selma, Oregon.
You know, we're going to talk about pot before the end of the night, too. I want to talk about the mother back there at Boeing, and I also want to talk about I also want to talk about Mars. Before we go there, though, a little bit more serious stuff. Before the break and throughout the program, we've been talking about this idea of consciousness and creating reality and this sort of thing. But so far, I mean, I like the sound of it and everything, and I understand how people can change. You know, we do create our reality by the actions that we make, but at the same time, nobody, at least no one that I've run into so far, can actually change the world in a sense.
Hitler did. What are you talking about?
Well, I mean, but I want to see somebody do the opposite of what he did, and I want it to be obvious where nobody debates whether it's happening or not. In other words, an obvious...
Well, right now it's happening because, how did Joseph Campbell put it? Not when he read the Seattle speech,
oh, the
but when
apocalypse.
He said...
I know what you're going to say.
Yeah. When you see the kingdom of the Father on earth, the apocalypse has already occurred. It is perpetual in its potential. That's right. Joseph Campbell. And I have to say... Campbell had
a
sense of what man is. That was another bottle of absinthe opening. Did you hear it pop?
I liked it.
Jeez.
We got more ice. You know where the ice is, Mark? Did you get more ice? It's important to have the ice because that water's got to be really cold, right, Richard?
Yes.
I'm trying to
where
well
you get your
my...
best
fairy action.
But in the old days, they considered it a sacrilege to put actual ice cubes in the glass itself. So it had to be done by fountains. And so your absinthe places in France had these fountains that were iced.
Huh.
And you went over and you filled from the ice.
How cool.
That was, they called the ice fountains, yeah. Uh-huh. That's how they did it in the old days when Oscar Wilde was writing. We did a ritual like this. I like to do these rituals as a way to begin a relationship in a community. Mm. This is the ritual form because you will always, always remember what happened here.
No doubt.
And that is the importance of integrating something like this into your daily life so that it has more meaning. We have a lot of rituals that we play in our daily life. You know, when you get up in the morning and you take your first leak at the toilet and you flush the toilet and then you have this little game before you got to get the toothpaste on before the toilet clears, or these little games that we play with each other, these are the rituals that I'm talking about that become sacred. If you can understand or relate to these rituals, you can do work with them. You change your personality. That's your basic, your auto exec back file and your config sys file that you boot up with every morning.
Mm-hmm.
Those little rituals that you play with yourself are how your computer runs that day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Metaprogramming, is it?
It's a type of metaprogramming. It has to do with your relationship to self.
Mm. So what about your relationship to the rest of the world, though? In other words, my concern is yours as well, and so many of ours. The problem of
well, we could
the
talk
world.
About Dr. Bob over there, the subgenius. That looks like a good place. Well,
yeah, there's some creep named Dr. Bob in a Fort Detrick lab somewhere making a bug that's going to kill everybody. You know.
Yeah.
So I mean, I'm concerned about changing that reality.
That's Mission Impossible 3.
Well, how
you know,
could it be?
Well, what I'm trying to suggest is that none of this is real. that the radio isn't real, that basically I am the voice of yourself talking to yourself in reflection, and the thoughts that you use after that become who you are and how the world goes. Mm. And it's all in a moment of time.
Try to wrap your hands around that one after it happened.
Well, that's the absence part of Oscar Wilde doing his little poetry
but
thing.
But that's
what
actually, it's sort of the way that it has to be approached, though. Otherwise, it's just despair.
Actually, there's lots of ways of empowerment. We can play the didgeridoo and do some continuous breathing like Kenny G does. Mm-hmm. That works pretty good.
Well, I mean, I actually, you know, I don't feel disempowered. I feel, you know, I pretty much do what I like to do and stuff, and I don't feel particularly oppressed, even though sometimes, you know, you made that the great quote from Campbell about how
the kingdom of the Father on earth.
Father.
That's right, an apocalypse.
Right. Well,
concept of end of days.
Right, but for 95% of the planet, I mean, the apocalypse has already happened. I mean, they are living in
there. You go. It is a metaphor for your relationship to self, and what we're all aspiring toward is union with self. That's what we all seek right now, is to be able to have knowledge, what they call in magic, not, and there goes the ice.
Yeah. I guess we got it.
Yeah, well, I guess we got more ice water here now. Good. Garcon.
Way to go.
There we go.
He's doing a great job. And Mark works at the bar, of course. That's
of
why
course he does.
He's doing an awesome job of the absinthe. What do you call a person who prepares absinthe? Is there... No.
They're called absinthe... professors.
Absinthe professor.
All right.
Well,
I'm just kidding.
You know, they call a coffee guy a barista, right?
Wouldn't it be nice to go into a club and have Timothy Leary come up to you and say, this is how you take LSD?
Yeah, it would be.
Well, that's what you're becoming.
Yeah.
You're going to show people...
how we do the absinthe.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm paying very close attention. I hope you know.
Okay, so we were talking about breathing and the importance of breath.
Yeah.
Breath is the first thing and the last thing that you do when you enter and leave this world. And a lot of the martial arts, and especially forms that are called Tai Chi, which is Chan forms of Buddhism, talk about the softness and the precision rather than the speed and the power. And it's believed that if you have the softness and the precision, that the speed and the power are a function of breath. And really, Tai Chi then is a form of martial arts. The way I studied it, I was taught by Tan Te Chung out of Victoria. He's the cover of National Geographic. He used to come down to Seattle once a week to train a bunch of people down there.
Yeah.
And he taught us how to change our perception of time with breathing. Now imagine that as a power tool like biofeedback for enlightenment. So chapter 4 is called... continuous, it's quantifier, of course.
Right.
Continuous breathing and virtual audio. It deals with sound and the nature of breath.
Awesome.
The way you integrate those two things with chanting, what we call synesthesia, where certain forms of sounds create visual imaging or cross-modal translations of sensory dimensions. Those kinds of things are used in forms of magic to heighten the ritual and be able to do magic on a whole nother level of working with the so-called ball.
Rick, there's a guy I know who was an Olympic athlete. He did this thing they call the biathlon. It's where you cross-country ski, and you also shoot a gun.
Right.
Right?
Uh-huh.
And
that's called hunting big cats.
Well,
that's what you do. You go across the seas. Well, you shoot them with...
Well, in any case, this guy... which lived up the street from me, and he told me that the way that they were trained is that, you know, when they were cross-country skiing, they're trying to go as fast as they can. So
sure.
They have high heart rate. And
heart rate.
You know,
pulse respiration, yeah.
Like major activity. Uh-huh. And then when they shoot their... then they have to stop and then...
their life forms and their functions back to a different homeostasis
so that
they can squeeze the trigger.
And he did something like what you're talking about, and he said he was able to bring his heartbeat down from like 140 beats per minute down to like 10 beats per minute.
That's what biofeedback does. It teaches you how to control and change autonomic functions.
In very short order.
At what level would that be called paranormal?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's just a matter of the physics and understanding how to do
there
a technique.
So Breaker Breaker 1-7 is ESP.
Mm-hmm. I gotcha. And Breaker Breaker 1-8 is...
Well, who knows what the Cowboys are thinking out there on the range. You know what I mean?
Right. Okay, so let's close our loop with regard to changing the world. Again, it goes back to Campbell and changing yourself.
My grandfather said it best. He said, if you want to change the world, you change yourself, and so changes the world.
Mm-hmm.
The war is within yourself, not outside yourself. In order to have union, that happens internally. And so if you want to change this world, you have to do it by example. You've got to start walking that talk. That's where the rigor of the difference between a physicist and a lawyer or a medicine. It's more rigor. That's what magic offers, is that discipline of rigor.
All right. Okay, let me ask you a question with regard to...
I know, I'm too heavy. I need to lighten up here a little bit.
No, it's good, and we're going to do like 15 more minutes.
But before I'm a physicist and before I'm a farmer, I am first and foremost a magician.
Huh.
It's a philosophy. It's a way of being. And that's the part that I would like to teach people, by example, that the spirituality is not what you do, but how you do it. And so the quality of your personal attempts in whatever format, belief system, or coordinate system that you happen to be working from, it's your intention, the purpose. What's your purpose?
Wow.
There you go, Michael. There's your next step. See, we're getting into these hypothetical, philosophical places that Oscar Wilde used to deal with.
Yeah, he was cool. Somebody sent me a note. I did a show on HIV and the fact that it was created by the U.S. government. Somebody sent me a note and said, you know, Mike, Oscar Wilde said, if you're going to go after people in power, you better do it with a sense of humor or something like that.
Well, remember,
you better make it funny, I think.
Remember in Tales of
I'm
Power,
really funny
the
enough.
Thing I ghostwrote?
Yeah.
I said there were four enemies of man. The first was fear. You know, and if you overcame fear, you achieved a degree of personal power, which means that power then became an enemy.
Yeah, because then you got to get over the power.
But once you started to see things more clearly, that you could overcome power by seeing things more clearly, clarity became an enemy.
Hmm.
Of course, the fourth age was old age. You're too old to do anything about it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an interesting and sort of humbling point, is that you know, David Rockefeller and me are going to end up in the same place one way or the other. We all
got that worm food down there and organic salts and...
But what about, okay, so...
I don't think so.
What about what about evolution? I was thinking about this today when you and I were talking, and you and I and Mick were at lunch, and we were talking about all the electromagnetic waves that are moving through the whole world all the time, and we're in this soup of who knows what, to mention all the chemicals and the air,
ELF soup. We're in a polluted... I don't know any self-respecting alien that'd come down here without a prophylactic glove put over him.
Right.
I mean, really, man, it's pretty dirty down here.
We're just in the middle of it, though, right?
What's that?
We're in the middle of it, though, and there's nothing we can do. You can't. I mean, you can do your best to shield yourself from it and try to do some of the beneficial things that you talk about to try to mitigate the circumstance, but you can't change the fact that we're living in that type of an environment. So my question is twofold. First of all, evolution, the human monkey as it stands, to me it seems pretty obvious that evolution is not done.
It's actually creationism and evolution are really both two models that don't really work. Now, there's a third model. I mean, these gods out on the rim doing biological experiments on creating things.
I see the whole environment.
I'll tell you what I do know.
Lloyd Pye. I haven't heard that name for a while.
Well, yeah. Lloyd Pye with his Star Child.
Yeah. The skull that was found.
There's some evidence to suggest that was something the Hopi talked about with the Ant-Men, which was a biological experiment that didn't work. They had, in the bone stichel, they had... what looked to be neurons so they could touch heads and have
transfer of information.
That's right, as a hive consciousness, Borg thing, you know. But
we kind of do that, but just with words, with
language. Well, the internet, what do you think?
Yeah.
Memes and Wikipedia, it's fake, you know. Basically, Lloyd showed that one thing I liked about his argument was that he suggested, I don't believe in the Star Child, I don't think it's an alien. Mm. I think it's something that, like a biological experiment that didn't work out. Mm. And so there were some artifacts.
Right.
But I think if I had that skull, what I would have done as Navy Intel is we would have taken it up to the University of B.C. and looked for dendrite material and DNA material in the bone structure, which is different than our bone structure.
Sure.
But
it seems reasonable.
That would have been my first study. They won't give me the skull because that would be what I would do.
The skull's
in England right now and it's locked up by some private people and they won't let it out. Nobody can look at it and take a look.
I'm surprised the Vatican doesn't have it.
The Vatican has their own things.
They got plenty of skulls.
I'll tell you what the Vatican does is they have the Jesuit, which is the original CIA.
Yeah, those guys are assassins, man.
They were the brainy group. That when there was something that nobody understood, they sent the Jesuits in, like, the name of the rose.
To
figure out what was really going on. They were the intellectual part of what was going on to figure out.
But weren't they also considered like an army of sorts? I mean, there were some badass Jesuits that killed a whole bunch of people.
Well, you know, like the CIA, there were splinters. that's what it is.
But
intel group, but
they
counterintelligence.
They were a smart group, though, that's for
sure. Yeah, they were the ones that could go in and move outside the box. That's what we were talking about, is outside the box. Yeah, I'm having trouble on this one, too.
Wow.
I'm starting to get gummed.
That's right. We only got an hour
left. I mean, really gummed.
I wonder if the girl who comes in and does the radio show after me is actually going to show up or not.
Well, I'm going to fall out pretty shortly here.
About one out of every two times she doesn't show up. That's all right. I can just turn the thing off.
Yeah. No, you don't do that. We can do play more music.
That's right. We'll just put music.
Yeah.
On
what we call that a spin doctor. You gotta.
You're the only doctor around.
No, I'm the second part of Dr. Strange.
So
what Lloyd Pye showed was that wherever there were breaks in what we called missing artifacts, what they call missing links. That in fact occurred. Exactly at the same time, there were missing links in grain structures that we were eating foods on, that because the mandible of the jaw changed to this without a missing link, and the grain did the same thing.
Whoa. What does that mean?
That means that some of this was with intentionality, and they were making gross changes going from here to there, and they needed to change our foods to match what our needs were.
Oh, so it's
now,
it's an engineering
idea. That's one theory.
Mm-hmm.
That's a theory. Now, with that said, that means that we were manufactured for a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And if you realize it, man's brain, the way it's designed, is not as efficient as the orca brain. And that means we can't achieve, even in evolution, what an orca can. And that would suggest that the orca is a god, not our god, but a god.
Mm-hmm.
And that this song is not about you, as Carly Simon would suggest, but maybe about cetacean, because this is a water planet.
Mm. Yeah, 70% water.
Man loses his narcissistic element of thinking the whole thing is about us and starts taking a closer look at our relationship to our environment. And that would lead to concepts of sustainability where we're in balance or in harmony with our universe rather than trying to change it.
Right, and fighting against it.
If we moved to the next level of realizing that the soil is conscious, Michael Reisia, that there's an aggregate that forms a consciousness similar to the difference between Chicago and New York, that there's a whole nother series of planes to exist that are rich for man's next growth and development. That we have, in fact, it's not about us. It's about something much better. And Gaia is the serpent at the end of the rainbow. It is the lost chord. It is that sound, that cymatic sound that relates the heart outside the body as a sound wave to the body inside, and that we'll call this book Into the Out Of.
What are the odds that the current environment...
I made your eyes glaze over. I'm sorry.
No, it's awesome. I love it. I can't wait to listen to this back.
I watched him go sideways.
Like, whoa.
That's the kind of show I wanted to do where there's the nowness of what's happening.
Yeah.
That is where the richness of life really occurs. That's what we're all about. That's what's going to happen shortly. What is it? 4 years, 6 minutes, 12 seconds in Planet X. And it's going to lead, yeah, whatever that meant. And it's going to lead to the evolution of man to the next layer.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Charlotte Bach wrote a book on that. She
That's
did her doctoral thesis at the Warburg called Homo Mutant, mm-hmm. Homo Lumen. It is about the next evolutionary stage of man
mm-hmm.
and what we're capable of achieving. Not what the dolphin or the orca can achieve, because that, unfortunately, I'm like David Copperfield. Sir, can I have some more? You know, I want some more grain. But we can't do what they can do, but there's no reason why we can't partner. What did that, was that, was that called the Red Planet, where the guy discovers this artifact where the aliens are... ship him in a shoot off into the galaxy, and the expression of the other astronauts are nice ride.
Nice ride, dude.
Nice
yeah.
ride.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what the dolphin and the orca are about.
Now, the interesting thing about our comparison to them, though, and I agree with you, I think they are something special.
Well, there's a relationship. We have not even explored that part of
right,
consciousness
right,
yet
right, right, right.
in our relationship to the rest of us.
But what about the fact that we use these tools? I mean, orcas and dolphins are amazing, and they have the ability to communicate and use Clifford algebra, etc. But they don't build things like Los Angeles.
No, but they blow sonoluminescent little bubbles. You can go on the internet and you can see that their art form that they blow these little bubbles into DNA, and then just before it hits the surface, that's an artwork in one of my new books.
I've seen
where it.
It
pops into light as a form of cold fusion as their art form.
Are they trying to show us something?
Huh, they already done that to me. I don't know about you, but I got the message real quick.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, I'm in awe. I am in awe like a child that has just discovered another part of the big yard.
Mm.
And I'm going, wow. Well, it's a big yard out there. You know,
yard.
It's not bigger than I thought,
it was.
And I'm going, yeah. And I'm sitting there going, wow. That's interesting. You know, what does that mean?
Yeah.
I haven't got a clue.
Oh, man.
But that's why I catch flies. I've got my mouth open in disbelief. I mean, just, you know, the wonderment of it is where the richness of it is.
Hey,
that, wow.
Hey, Rick, that's a good chance to take a question from one of our in-studio listeners. I think that Mr. Bartholomew Bean has a question. Hi, Bart.
Yeah, I was wondering, what are we going to do with the yard we got right now?
Yeah. Well, how did Chauncey Gardner put it in that movie, Being There? Well, the spring comes, and then things start to grow again. Oh. You know, I loved, you know, he was the best
just
actor.
Another one, you guys.
Yeah, we're, who cares? Yeah, I can.
Well, I got Angela to sort of as my relief valve.
See how it's going? Two bottles of absinthe with seven people. I had it figured for nine.
Holy shit.
Nine, eight. Seven.
And we've got to drink every last drop.
Everybody
right?
falls down
yeah,
and their face down. And that's how the... We,
oh,
yeah.
Boy.
There
we're
you go.
Trying to figure out how to push the show.
And this should be come a classic just because we're having fun.
Yeah. I got, there's people on the web that I should not be ignoring, but there's some very funny things that people are saying on the
cool.
web.
Cool. Read some of them.
Well, they're talking about Salvia Divinorum.
Salvia Divinorum. Isn't it interesting that the single most important brain chemistry, dimethyltryptamine, also occurs in crabgrass?
Right.
What does that mean?
What's that all about?
You think, I mean, what do you think God's trying to get us to figure out something here? What do you think that means? You know, the way I said it with Trout, some plants, this is a quote from Trout, some plants aren't really plants. Their delivery system from God.
Truth of the matter, I think. Here's one. Mike sounds absinthe-minded.
absent-minded. That's a good place to be. Now, there is metaphor correct.
Is that great?
Because, but the difference is it all comes around what goes around, which means that even though it doesn't seem that it's related, that's what the dimethyltryptamine, part of the lysergic acid amine,
yeah,
about,
yeah,
is that they help you connect and make meaning out of chaos.
Here's another one. This is the best show ever, at least with Rick Miller. that's great. Then the guy says, I'm going to go smoke salvia.
Good luck, buddy. What have those close encounters like Nevedev talks about. Nevedev, that close encounters with stick people, that's a very weird place.
What do you know about salvia?
Salvia divinorum is also dimethyltryptamine, but it's not NN. Dimethyltryptamine.
It's more
it's
like
usually
5-alpha.
Well, no, it's not 5-alpha. It's DIMI.
Huh.
It's another little structural
another
difference. And because of it's structurally different, it's metabolized
well,
different.
It's so weird because these molecules, they're different, but they're not that different. I mean, they're just...
They're different enough that your experience of them is different from atom to ecstasy.
Yeah, but fundamentally different in many cases. It seems like it wouldn't be that different.
Well, they define the gating system across the blood-brain barrier.
Mm.
And that part is very important because what is that, what do they call that phage, Michael Phage, what is that called? The telomerase, the fraying of the DNA molecule.
Telomerase.
And that, telomerase. Mm. And that part of fraying is where the coding part is your voice of coyote over voice of reason.
Uh-huh. That's what actually determines.
That's the place where it becomes one to the other and why the voice has a different sound to it than the other one does. And those are the same voice from different sides of the fence. Voice of coyote and voice of reason are really the same, and they're all based on your values and your belief systems.
All right, that's a great place to take a break. It's top of the hour, and I sort of missed it by a couple minutes, but that's okay because no one at the FCC is listening to this show.
What's that?
It's mostly the people that are more notorious. All right, this one is called... we'll finish the show with that one, so we won't play that, but we'll play this one here. This is called Not Answering Today, Pericomitatus, on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan. You listen to Radio Orbit. On the web, MikeHagan.com, and my guest, of course, Richard Allen Miller. You can find him at RichardAllenMiller.com, and of course, you can link there directly from my site anytime. And you can also check out 3 or 4 or 5, I don't know how many shows Rick and I have done in the past, but you can check them all out in my archives, and they're all worth listening to, okay? All right, once again, here's Pericomitatus.
And souvenirs, packing memories and fears. Take your paintings off the walls. Tell your closest friends goodbye. Sever all remaining ties. Ignore all incoming calls. I pass your window in the dark. Hear the pounding of my heart. Shadow moves across the shade. Call you on the telephone when I know that you're at home. Well, I guess you're just not answering today. I see the coastline in my dreams, hot blue sky and rocky sea, a magic cap on every wave. Seeing you and you and me, and nothing else to stand and see. Day after day after day after day. Pass your window in the dark, hear the pounding of my heart as your shadow moves across the shade. Call you on the telephone when I know that you're at home. I guess you're just
KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Another wonderful piece of music there. That's Perry Comitatus. The CD is called Kindred Sith. And it's available on CD Baby in about a week, probably. Maybe two. But I'll have it up on my music archives sometime between now and then, okay? Perry Comitatus, a.k.a. Mick Watts. That one was called Not Answering Today. All right, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit on KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My guest is Richard Allen Miller on the web at richardallenmiller.com. And Richard stepped out for a minute, so that'll give me a chance to quick say hi to everybody and tell you what's happening next week. I have no idea, actually. but I actually do. I thought I had written it down. Apparently I didn't. But what is it? The 12th of May? I don't know who's on the show. So, yeah, so anyway, tune in. And I don't know. I'm sure it'll be different than tonight, that's for sure. Rick's getting settled back in here. Mark's getting settled. All right, it's a good thing you got back because I just made a complete fool of myself because I was trying to, while you were gone, I was going to tell people a little bit about who's going to be on the program next week.
And you
and
lost
I forgot.
It.
I have no idea who's going to be on the show.
Who cares? Because it's all right now.
Yeah,
and
who
cares? No,
oh,
no, no.
Now, this is actually really funny because I just remembered, and it's your friend, Neil Goldstein.
Hey, Neil. And Neil is a very, and Neil Goldsmith is a very cool person.
Well,
he was editor of Omni. He does the poetry science talks in New York City.
This guy really is amazing. Former editor of Omni magazine and in the middle of a whole bunch of really cool projects right now.
He's one of my friends. But, you know, Neil is in The New Yorker. He has that ad, the first ad in The New Yorker that advertises for LSD therapy.
Yeah, he's,
and so Neil is a revolutionary with a vision that I absolutely respect. He had me, that's where I presented the first concept of the non-local mind was with Neil in mm-hmm. New York City. Mm-hmm. Nobody got it then because I didn't have it then, but that's where it started.
Know. I don't know. He's about as forward-thinking a person as I've run across because I was into Omni 30 years ago, and that was formative for me. I mean, just in opening my yes. mind and my eyes to different ideas, you know.
Well, there was Marilyn Ferguson, remember?
And I do.
Brain Mind Bulletin. I used
I
to write for her. And then there was weird magazines like, remember Dr. Charles Muses used to have Astrologia and several other very... And then there was Julia Stuhlman that used to have Fields Within Fields with 777 UN Plaza. Yeah. And, you know, there's been some heavy-duty... Buckminster Fuller.
Buckminster
I wanted
Fuller.
To mention wow. Buck for a minute.
You know, he went to school at Carbondale, not far from here.
Buckminster Fuller's primary mathematician was Bob Marshall. And I brought a special DVD to share with you, if you're interested.
Sure.
On Bob Marshall. He's an idiot savant. That led Bob to Buckminster Fuller's entire concept of geodesic domes
really?
Was all started with Bob Marshall and his concepts of numeronomy. Now, numeronomy is, he is an idiot savant that, like, for example, I interviewed him more than 20 years ago, and so my notes on those interviews have led me to the Diamond Body and are part of the Buckminster Fuller Museum now. But Bob took, for example, Riemann's challenge of a mathematical equation for recurring primes, which no one's ever done. You know what a recurring prime
is?
I do.
I like cryptography.
17, 19, 23, 27. No, 27, 28, 29, yeah, 31.
29, 31.
Yeah, okay,
30,
now you're getting
seven.
How Bob did it was not mathematically. He took and visualized, he was a visual idiot savant.
Yeah.
Visualized a torus going down and did rotating numbers around it and then did a reverse torus going back up that connected in a straight line.
Huh.
For recurring primes.
Huh.
And that's how you get 31 and 29 and how you get those things that are very close to each other and then groups away,
right,
and groups again. You do that with two toruses going in opposite directions. And Bob's solution was visual.
Huh.
He was a genius.
Amazing.
And I had the very deep honor of being probably the only person besides my ex-wife that could understand what he was talking about. And that's what led us to write the very famous paper, N equals 50, Vehicle 6, which Crowley called The Follower. Add, divide, multiply, and understand, and one will follow. And that's why in the OTO I'm called The Follower, because we translated that as N equals 50, Vehicle 6, which is the second book of the law. In the second book. I don't know if you like that magical trivia stuff, but...
I do, actually. When you were over at my place earlier, we were by the bookshelf briefly, but there were other things down there I wanted to show you, but I wanted to show you yours.
I hadn't seen those books in a long time.
Well, you've got a couple of them sitting around, I have a feeling.
I've been riding around a long time, so
but
there it is.
Anyway, I'm thrilled to have them, actually, and I consider them actually treasures, and I appreciate the fact that you signed them today. Thank you.
Well, I signed them to your son, because that's who's going to get them.
That's who's going to get them.
Your four-year-old boy.
And I have a couple
that's
of...
That's where it'll go next.
I have a couple of copies of The Modern Alchemist that I'll give away to people if you donate to the program. Just send me an email or whatever, and I'll send you the book. But you got to become a member of KOPN here because we're in the middle of a pledge drive. But it's a wonderful book, and these are autographed. So, you know.
This is on the personal. What I was going to tell you about The Modern Outcomes, we got sidetracked. What Joel did is he rendered the pen and ink into English, and then we added psychological commentary.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a 14th century alchemist that quantized A, B, C in the stages of personal transformation, from union of opposites, folly à deux, all the things that we do in moving to the next level of awareness. And this mystic had it dead on. In fact, the book changes from animalistic salamander in the fire and the serpent biting its tail and the stag and the unicorn in the forest to the son, the father, and the angel on the mount, where there is union with self. And that's what we're all aspiring toward. In other words, this 14th century alchemist envisioned that the stages of man began with animalistic and more primitive ways of consciousness and eventually evolved from being a mammal into what the Sifu calls a human being, where they used the idea of civilization and a relationship of father and the son, where the father consumes the son and then becomes ill, and then the son and the father meet with the angel on the mountain.
Well, Rick, that's sort of like... I mean, that's
archetypal.
Absolutely, because it's the struggle of our time. In other
well,
words,
it's the struggle of each of us, and what this book does...
Because we're part monkey and we're part angel.
Well, we're part animal and we're part human. We have an animalistic where the dog and the wolf are in conflict with each other, and then there's a place where the father and the son have a relationship as being the same thing. The way I raised my daughter, for example, my daughter was not another human being. She was a reflection of the younger feminine part of myself in the reality. And because I raised her like that, I made no judgments on her. And what happened next is a relationship that happened between my daughter and I is something that she doesn't enjoy with her wife or with her mother, because the mother has somehow separated the daughter as part of herself, whereas Paula was the feminine younger part of myself.
I understand.
And so my daughter was able to do things I couldn't do. I couldn't criticize her.
Hmm.
I couldn't find judgment on it. I had to, wow, that's kind of cool. I couldn't do that. I've got stories, you know, that talk about. And that relationship is what has given me the richness of the current relationship I enjoy with my daughter, because I never made judgment on her. And you know, there's ways of approaching your relationships and your friends that if you use these belief systems as opposed to arbitrary other belief systems, You can do things you can't do here.
Hmm.
That's what the purpose of belief systems are about. They allow you to do things you can't do with other belief systems.
But at the same time, the ability to move beyond your own belief system.
Well,
right.
Or it doesn't mean you move beyond it so much as it's not appropriate right now. And so, whether I believe in Christ or I believe in this or that, that isn't the issue, right?
Appropriateness.
That's the correct word.
Very well.
And then what you do doesn't mean you get rid of it.
Mm.
What you do is you choose those beliefs which will allow to happen in the physical world, which you choose as your path. And doesn't mean you get rid of those beliefs. You simply change your clothing.
Great way to put it. You know, there are certain cultures, like in India, like when you go through a change in life, you know, from a working man to a man who's retired, you actually change your name and you change the way you dress and all that stuff.
Women do that also when they get married. There's a whole bunch of different ways we change our self-image to meet the needs of that situation. And that's what belief systems are. That belief systems are to be used as tools, not gospel.
Mm.
They're like clothing.
Well, that's you remind me of, and it's great because we can sort of come back to our original topic of absinthe. There was an article that was rather timely but silly with regard to it, the research involved, that came out from like Fox News a couple of days. Literally,
what do
yesterday.
You think? Is this about alcohol?
Not at all.
Then what do you think it's about?
Well,
what did that article miss?
Yeah, they missed the fact that, they missed something.
I don't know what it is.
It's the essence of it.
The ritual part
right.
of the...
Right.
What a ritual is the celebration of a myth. Mm. It's a celebration. It's the party of it. The celebration of a myth.
And in order for a myth to remain, it must be celebrated. It must be participated in.
That's where you put the energy in. And that's what makes psyche into matter.
Hmm. Remarkable. All right.
Magic.
Yeah.
M-A-G-I-C-K.
M-I-G-I-C-K.
For Medford, Ashland, Grants Pass, Illinois Valley, Coos Bay, and Klamath Falls. Just kidding.
Man, I love Angela. She's the greatest, by the way. She does a great show on Thursday nights called Jazz in the House. No, it's actually called The Cool Sounds of Jazz, or The Good Sounds of Jazz. Right? Cool, good, whatever. Anyway, Thursday nights from 8 o'clock until 10,
okay.
You can catch Angela, and you can tune in this week and give her some money. You're not giving
so
me
that's any. The purpose of what Oscar Wilde understood when they were hanging out in those little cafes before Jankart Reinhold, you know, the model and forms of jazz.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, let me say hi to Hope. My friend just walked in. Hello, Hope.
Hi.
And who's in? Anybody else? No, it's just Mark. Okay.
Did you know that Hope?
Well, no, you've been here. I thought there was.
Did you know
new.
That?
I thought it was someone new. That's all. Not just Mark.
Hope was the last evil in Pandora's box.
Hope is the first evil in my box.
No, it's the last evil. That's why they call him Hope Chests. And I tell you, man, you gotta. Got to be careful about that whole thing.
I'm telling you. Talk to him about being careful. That's the guy who's in real trouble.
He's over there caramelizing some more. Right?
I like the way he does it, actually. Even though,
having
even
a good
though
time.
Just Mark, I appreciate the caramelization that you've been doing for us.
That's a good one. Useless. Senseless.
Hey, let's talk about Mars.
The Mars Project.
I want to talk about two things about Mars. The Mars Project and growing pot there.
Growing pot on Mars?
Yeah. I want to talk about
I haven't done that one. I've done it on the moon, but I haven't grown it on Mars.
All right, talk about Lunar Base, and then we'll move out to Mars.
Lunar Base Alpha 1.
Yeah, Lunar Base Alpha
High
1.
High Times, February issue of 1992.
1992?
Yeah, they did the interview with me.
All right, this
on
is
growing
a...
pot on the moon, where we invented Grolux. Lamps out of Seattle, growing Sammamish Slough. Can you imagine at Boeing? Here we are.
Right.
And hemp was one of the four plants we were studying. And well, we wanted to have an environment that had no filtering from the atmosphere. So we had long wave ultraviolet radiation.
Right. We had
sunspots, which was in microwave band. You can do that with xenon. There's a new pot thing for people. You want to grow some killer pot. You hit your xenon tube, which is a big klystron, and you hit it for 3 seconds, 10 times, and what it'll do is it'll char the first layer of epidermal on the leaf, causing a white film to form, and you blow it off with carbon dioxide, and watch how the cannabinols tumble there. Yeah,
ah, yes,
that's you know, that's Boeing at its very finest. And I have to tell you,
the work of Boeing, okay, people? Yeah. Right? I mean, 1990. You know what's going on here? Huh? Boeing, right? You thought they were making airplanes.
Well,
okay?
We had Lunar Base Alpha 1. We had to simulate. What we had, Art Pilgrim set this closed system up. Now, this is the reason of the Seattle SLU thing. We were trying to develop a system which was a closed system that we could live on the moon with as a closed, you know, system of environment. And the way we did it,
right, to build a
we had a twin door we had to go through, and they would xenon us so that we would blow the white powder off our bodies and sterilize everything. And we would go inside the room, and we were growing chickens. They were roaming all over the place. Chickens were running around. They were pooping. And they were pooping into wire mesh.
I'm sure you were
into the water.
Right.
And we had tilapia with the chlorella, using the manure to grow chlorella that did tilapia, which was the milkfish.
And how long ago was this, by the way?
1970.
Okay, so
and
this is 4 years ago.
That's one of the first things I did when I came out of
Navy. Yeah, but my point, though, Richard, just really quickly, is that people today, in the environmentalist movement and in the, you know, the sustainable living movement, they think this is all like brand new stuff. They got people that are
brand new.
Yeah,
Thirty-eight years ago, I did this. And worse and better. I mean, we were survivalists. We were like taking it right to that edge, and we were on the moon.
So
and we had to have a closed system where we had our proteins and our other kinds of things that we ate as nutrient, so that we could survive. And we were using hemp as one of the four plants. We had flax and several other plants because these are the primary ones.
Yeah,
and I discovered that the different light bands, long ultraviolet, other things, caused the cannabinols to tumble. Remember in high school when you had the Gaussian distribution, you dropped the marble down and went click, 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 and it formed, you know, so many fell here and so many fell there, and you had your Gaussian distribution?
Right.
That you could skew the cannabinols in that direction, were more hallucinogenic if you used these bandwidths, and you could skew it more in that direction, which were more sedatives when you hit those light sections.
That way.
And so halogen worked pretty good, long ultraviolet. You know, we were growing indica.
Incredible.
And then we realized that when you stress the plant, what they called Acapulco gold. Acapulco gold was when you took a muslin bag 2 weeks before you're going to harvest bud number 73. You know, you had it all numbered, bud number 73. We put a muslin bag over that. And what we did is we starved the chlorophyll so that the plant was stressed. Didn't have any chlorophyll anymore. So, you know, it wasn't getting any light. It could breathe, but it couldn't see the light.
Right, right.
So the cannabinols changed. Acapulco gold. Then, I don't know, that's how you did it. Well, that's how it works. And what you were doing was trying to skew the chemistry. There goes Michael. He just went over the edge. We're going to have to shoot him. he's done for the count.
Oh, my God, that's too much.
What you did is you were skewing the lights to make it different.
I've been skewered.
You think we got the right light here, buddy? Oh. And what we discovered was that the longer ultraviolets with the halogens series primarily, and then we went into the longer wavelengths, we discovered, time for another drink, excuse me.
Yes.
That we're just passing this around now, and it's making everybody fall. We discovered that you could create super plants, which started with Sammamish Slew. Sammamish Slew was the first heirloom. That was the one that was what we call two-toke. that you took two tokes and then you forgot about smoking anymore. No, I mean, that was two tokes. That one toke was called charis. That came from Kathmandu, and there was a temple up there where they had the temple balls, and there were brown temple balls and green temple balls. My biker friends would go to Kathmandu, and they'd buy the temple
balls.
I think
I got green temper balls.
Medic, we've got another guy down here.
I need some help over here.
That's crazy. Where did that one come from? Henny Youngman. Sure. Where did he come in here? Anyway. Yeah, I know. It's all mirrors, smoking mirrors, actually.
No fun intended.
We discovered what the Buddhists would do is they had this temple and they had to support it up in Kathmandu, and the priests would go out into the marijuana fields. They had these big fields, and they would do their meditation. And the oil that was used to make a temple ball came from the side of the nose. There are 32 nadi points, NADI points, in the Indian traditions of different places where you secrete different oils on your body. And that was nose oil that was used in the temple ball that formed this ball that they rubbed in their hand during the day to form a meditation. And they would more oil off their nose to make this ball. And at some point, at the end of the meditation of that day, it was a 22 to 34 ounce, 34 gram ball that would be mostly green. Now, the green temple ball is a number 1 or 10 on the highs. I used to have a temple ball I had. It was a 1-ounce temple ball that lasted me about 2 years. Huh. And we used to play hash, and we'd smoke the hash and play chess, drinking Grand Marnier or whatever. And I
thought pot and hash were just for dumbasses and for, like, you know, losers that you couldn't even think or something. You play chess, man? Wow.
Charis means angelic, by the way, and it comes from Kathmandu, and there's only one like it in the world. And that charis, the green ones, you could take a small pinch of it and you'd fluff it up in your hands into a big pile. And I used to lay a $100 bill down and I'd say, I'll bet there's nobody that can take a single toke of that and not choke. And of course, everybody wanted the $100 bill.
Sure.
So they would fake it. Nobody, yeah. I never lost my $100 bill.
Huh.
Because the very finest ones, it expands so abruptly into the lungs that you have to choke. Even in Amsterdam, when I was at the Marijuana Museum with Joseph Aaron, and Joseph, by the way, is a friend of mine that runs, his wife runs the Sensi Seed Bank in Amsterdam, and he, you know, used to do this thing where they would light it and you would inhale it, you know, where you don't get the green tars and other kinds of things. It's a different kind of a high.
Is that the vaporizer thing that they do?
Yes, vaporizer.
Yeah,
that's correct. Uh-huh. The highs on that aren't anything even near what a charis was. And the indica that we grew at Lunar Base Alpha 1 was a number 2. It was also probably the best in the world.
Amazing.
And all your heirlooms that are coming down, like bubblegum and some of the other...
Yeah, and strawberry and blueberry
and all this
stuff.
They all came originally from Sammamish Slough. My girlfriend at that time was a Japanese-born Hawaiian that lived up in the Big Island, and Captain Cook, Ataraxia, avocado farm, she's putting in there.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a little Japanese-born Hawaiian, and she's my girlfriend. And she's the one that taught me how to clone, where that's what we did, where we had a mother block. And the mother block today, which is 46 years old, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's still alive.
Yeah, right. This one single plant.
A cannabis plant that's 46
years old, is now approximately, 3 feet in diameter. And we have maybe as many as 100 and 150 buds germplasm into the side of it for the genetics.
Well, you know, if you ever need a place to hide one of those cuttings...
Well, it's called Sammamish Slough out of Seattle, Washington.
Yeah,
let me tell you, man, that's where it all started.
I know a good place to take good care of.
My friend, Steve Murphy, who ran the indoor clean shop, used to, Steve Murphy, I gave him the recipe, and he wrote a book called Growing Marijuana, It's Indoors Under Plants, which was the marijuana leaf with the two ladybugs. He changed his name to Murphy Stevens. He turned it backwards. That's Indoor Sunshop.
No, Stevie Wonder did that.
No, Stevie...
It really did.
Now you're messing me, really, Carly.
I got you, though.
Yeah. Oh,
Anyway,
they just handed me more absinthe.
Well, and there's
this
for you sitting right up here.
Getting pretty crazy. Anyway.
I tell you what, we're going to take a quick break because we have something that's moving around the room. Well, a number of things actually that are moving around the room, and I'm not one of them. It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. Back in a few minutes with Richard Allen Miller.
Well, they rode the range in rolling plains from Germany to China with their animals and jewelry in tow. And I guess it's hard to say exactly all the things you trail behind you. Hard to say what lives deep down within your blood, you know. 10,000 ancient animals alive inside your brain, and you can conjure up their forms in pain and bronze. Our granddad's herded cattle on the Oklahoma range, and I guess it's safe to say that way of life is gone. Kindred Scythian, can you recall the true pulse of the seasons and the way it feels to look out on endless grass and freedom? Recall the heat of summer and the high snows of December. Well, it was Granddad's job to herd them calves. I guess it's our job to remember. Thousand ancient animals alive inside my brain, and while I really can't be certain what they mean, I know that there's a reason that them images remain, because they speak instinctive wisdoms in my dreams. At some level I am certain that it's important I remember that we all had our beginnings in the mud. Before that ancient imagery gets all scattered and dismembered, recall the viper sleeping in the garden strikes before the flood. Kindred Scythian, can you recall the true pulse of the seasons and the way it feels to look out on the endless grass and freedom? Recall the heat of summer and the high snows of December. Well, it was Granddad's job to herd them calves. I guess it's our job to remember.
Kindred Sith, that's the title track from an album by Perry Comitatus, a.k.a. Mick Watts. Thanks for the music, Mick. I appreciate it. That will be available on cdbaby.com in the next couple weeks, and you can always go to my music archives and find out information about Mick and other musicians that appear on the program here. All right, it is about 25 minutes before the hour of 2 a.m., now on the 6th of May, 2008, my guest is Richard Allen Miller. We've been drinking absinthe and talking about all kinds of interesting and fun stuff for the last couple hours. We're going to do it for another 15 or 20 minutes here and then say goodbye to y'all. But before we do that, we will get back to Richard and see if we can come up with some coherent conversation between the two of us.
That's a challenge.
I know, between you and me right now.
Yeah, I know. It's fun, though.
It is great, actually.
It's really nice to be right across from you like this, rather than on a telephone. It really is.
All right, hey, do we have, in your opinion, do we have, and by we I mean human beings, are there bases on the moon, on
yes.
Mars,
yes.
things like that?
Yes.
I mean, I've seen stuff
yes.
on the moon.
To answer, yes. There are bases on the moon.
How long? Long time, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they cut off the moon project around...
Well, 1967, 1969
that was, when we,
was when we were supposed to be our first landing.
The first, that was the one where,
right.
where the public got
and
to know.
My understanding is that's approximately when we did it because we had really no interest in the moon ever, really. It was always, always about Mars. Mars had water. We knew that in 1964.
Mm-hmm.
And there were several attempts to terraform Mars. And then the joint expedition 1 year before the moon. The moon is a gravity well. And while they say, well, there's water on Mars, on the moon. No, no, there isn't water. Not like there is Mars.
There's water on Mars.
They're correct. There's a lot of water on Mars. Mm-hmm. In fact, the way they do that is using what we call a muon factory that creates tachyons. And the tachyons are used in Cherenkov radiation. Those were what I did in my junior and senior year in 1961 and 62.
And what's the
that were then used in the Mariner experiments in 64 flyby to discover water on Mars.
Well,
we used...
Holy cow. You know, Rick, the Mariner... okay, so
1964.
Right, and Viking was later. Viking was in...
Viking was later. It was the Mariner 1
well,
that
Mariner...
did the discovery of water on Mars.
Well, you know what?
And it did that with a tachyon factory.
Also, that's remarkable because I mentioned, and this is a good time to mention it, I mentioned to you earlier today this guy Kent Stedman, who was my best friend, and I'm dedicating the show to him tonight.
Cool.
Our absinthe ritual was for Kent. And and he was an amazing guy, but he was a sleuth when it came to NASA. And
well, NASA, you know, they had me pegged. Navy had me pegged as a junior in high school. They had a big bullseye on me. That's what they're doing with high school kids now.
Yeah, they
all the
kids
really
so young.
Good, bright kids have NSA and Navy already watching them.
Mm.
That's because that's what we do. And they orchestrated my undergraduate work. They orchestrated my work. Before I went to back to graduate school, they orchestrated my graduate work, and they orchestrated my work as paranormal, and now...
Do you think they're still involved in what
yes,
you're doing?
Yes. Huh? Because...
I mean, the fact that you and me are here, do you think that's a big deal, or do you think it's just a fluke?
No, that part is part of the bigger pie, but what I'm about is being the postman. I'm going to bring the fine-tuning... for our rural communities together so that we can interface and dialogue with each other.
Are we already in checkmate?
Hold on. Here. Grab that mic.
All
right. Go ahead.
Are we already in checkmate and they don't even care if you tell us what you know? Like, it doesn't even matter anymore?
It's not about checkmate. Nobody has a clue what's really happening. The New World Order is hanging on with deer hands because if the pole shifts occur, that infrastructure's gone. And it's about setting up an infrastructure that will assure the continuance of man.
Well,
and that's,
man.
We are survivalists,
mm-hmm.
and all of you out there are going to be probably watching this happen and be part of the new world, because it's not about the new world order, it's going to be about the new world spirituality, the part where we all grok something more about what's happening now.
Yeah, the
rock and roll.
The new world.
Everybody's into their cups.
You know, the new world.
This is nice.
All right, this is caramelization happening live.
Caramelization.
I love that.
Happening live. That's a cool. That's kind of.
Anyway, you know, Rick, I tend to think that you know the new world order is actually the old world order.
And well. It's
and
the
it's
nine families. I have this comic book.
A pathetic world order.
Pathetic. You know, basically, in fact, I couldn't be the new world order, but I have to say, I wouldn't want to be responsible for the decisions that they're having to make, like there's too many people on Earth. Who would want to make those decisions on who dies and who lives?
Yeah, but it's no one's decision to make, though.
Well... Africa, India, China. You know, these are places that are going to happen. Indonesia right now with the rice. This is happening
But you let nature,
now.
You let nature figure out who survives. You don't have men in offices.
Who's deciding. Nature? Yeah. Well, what is nature? Does that mean the gods?
There's a big list in the afterlife.
What do they call that? The etheric, what do they call that? The big book of karma?
Oh, yeah, send your money now. Thanks.
How did they put it in that one video I put? But for that, you have to join the church.
Yeah, everybody wants you to join their church.
Well, that's what it's about. That's
what it turns out.
How did they say it in my book? I made a video when I was at Evergreen. It was called "Eat the Sun." Then you will be your own father. And what it was about is a new religion based on biofeedback. And it won Best Picture in Cannes. Papa Johnny made the movie. What we did, we were upstairs, and we were the physicists that they came in, and they said we'd like a science fiction idea that would make sense. And we decided we would have a new religion based on biofeedback. And the way it worked was that if you put your body in perfect stasis with itself, you would know the unknowable truth while you were still alive. If everything was in sync with itself. And so the movie takes off like a 2001 where we have someone in a bath of electrodes all over their body and we're doing biofeedback to put them in perfect sync with themselves with the understanding that at that moment, that was the Vidaru Telemahandi, eat the sun, Tapasya ritual, trial by fire, and then you will be your own father. So what happened is, there was a guy that went through the Tapasya ritual and was brain damaged. Oh, mentally injured. Well, we've no longer allowed that kind of thing to happen because you know they had an interview with a salesperson. The whole movie was done like a 60 minutes where we interviewed different people, including the people that were damaged by this Tapasya ritual. Now, what happened next was that my ex-wife and I, Iona, wrote a 3-book series for Jeremy Tarcher that was called On Video Feedback Systems, where you could put the body in perfect sync with itself and know the unknowable truth at that moment and achieve union with self technologically. And that was called the Tapasya Ritual, which is trial by fire, electronic trial by fire. And it's an interesting movie. It's called Eat the Sun. Then it's a cult classic out of Cannes. It was a half hour, won Best Picture of the Year. It was done from Evergreen, where we were teaching. I was first faculty at Evergreen. And we used to write these weird things, and then these other geniuses would make movies out of them.
Amazing.
And Papa Johnny was, like, brilliant. And he made this movie. And the librarian was the Vidaru Telemahandi, where what happened was
Rick, you have had the most remarkable life.
I've had a lot of fun.
I mean,
have a boring life. You've got to have fun with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, but I mean, my God. It's
hang
just,
on.
I mean, it's just, you've never ceased to amaze me.
Well, I've been very lucky. And I've known brilliant people, not just, it isn't about me.
I realize.
Friendships.
I realize it, but that's what experience is about. I mean, it's about
being able to share them,
right?
So little stories,
right,
so that everybody can now somehow integrate them into their own lives and their own personal story.
Yeah,
because everybody's got one.
No doubt, and I think you learn that. I mean, if you just take the time and talk to anybody, I mean, you'll find out they have a pretty damn interesting story.
Cool,
but yours is sort of remarkably interesting.
Well, I've been lucky.
My God,
I've been.
You know. All right, so we got 10 minutes left. What do you think is happening with regard to politics and all this stuff? In other words, we got an election coming up in November.
This is really a weird place.
It's so weird.
I must tell you. Yeah.
I mean,
what do you think about
Clinton, Obama,
and Obama? And I call it Winky Winks and the Iron Maiden.
But not only
and
that,
then there's Winky Winks and the Iron Maiden. And they're both really scary. Winky Winks belongs to Rockefeller, and the Iron Maiden, our God, who knows where she's,
but they're all
God she serves.
They're all,
you know,
Bilderberg. They're all.
I didn't swallow.
Of the same gang.
I agree. Yeah, but you know, I
and
McClain, McLean, have you watched the way he holds that mic?
Oh, he's...
That's scary. I mean, really, man. He holds this mic like... it's kind of scary.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to even
and
talk
so,
about
it. Just...
Anyway, but this is what we've come down to. And there's five months between now and November.
I know. Lord, deliver us from evil.
I mean, imagine what's
going to happen. Hopefully the apocalypse will occur and that'll take care of it. You know what I mean?
I have a feeling that something's going to happen and just throw the
whole
thing up.
Well, it is going to happen. In 4 years, 2 minutes, 6 minutes, 6 seconds, and, you know.
Yeah.
Well, that's Planet X. It is being plotted by NASA right now.
All right,
it came in from the Oort cloud. It passed by Uranus, Jupiter.
Hey, leave my anus out of this. All
right. Well, that's the closest.
This is by Uranus and Jupiter?
Right. It's a planetoid, a small moon that is extremely dense. And you can go to Google Earth and you can watch its plot coming through the galaxy on the star, on the space part of their icons. They have a space thing that does the same thing as you know, going down and looking at the boyfriend that's visiting your girlfriend with the license plate. You can do a pan on it and get the license plate number. This is really weird shit. It's on the internet.
Oh,
now. It's called Google Earth. You can download it.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But the space section will show the NASA plot of Planet X that came in through the Oort cloud. It heated up both Neptune and Uranus's core, and now is heating up Jupiter's core. It will pass closer to...
This is true, people. You know, there are a lot of...
No, this is actually happening right now. And you can watch the progress of it.
Well,
it will be between Mars and Earth in the year 2012. It'll be closer to Mars, which will probably create a heated atmosphere, making Mars livable, and it will cause a pole shift in the Earth. And there will be probably, as we're understanding it now, a minimum of about 2 years where things don't grow on Earth because of the mantle being up in the atmosphere.
Well,
and that's
I know.
Why Gates and all the rest of them have put these seed repositories in Iceland, because it's happening. And wakey, wakey, as Crocodile Dundee says, it's wakey, wakey.
Well,
it's like, pay attention. You should focus now on learning how to farm small gardens. You don't have to do all your food. Learn how to grow some of it. And learn how to save seed.
And then trade
for
the rest.
You can plant the seed the next year. And when you do that, learn how to barter. Because that's going to be how we survive. There's going to be an...
Hold on.
Slider.
A question from Mark. Go ahead.
I just hope it's not the last planet that's like, hey, let's make a giant particle collider that goes underneath three countries.
Oh, you're talking about the gravity wave generator in Houston. That's owned by Washington State University, Raymond Band Theory, and is now managed by Caltech and MIT, and that's creating event horizons.
No, he's talking about the one in CERN in Switzerland.
No, I'm talking about the gravity wave generator.
He's talking about bigger
yeah,
than
the CERN one
about.
Isn't as much concern for me and their black hole as the gravity wave generator in Houston, Texas, that is changing the shape of space. And what they're doing, they're changing the shape of space. This is an actual physical thing they're doing, which is going to create the fog where we have dimensional gating things with things coming in and out that we have no clue.
Okay, I'm starting to break the circle, but I got to go to church.
I got
to
go.
Holy rollers.
Holy rolling,
Holy roller coasters.
Yeah, look, I mean, I got to tell you that.
I'm speaking about Washington State University, my alumni at Pullman, owns the gravity wave generator in Houston, Texas, that is currently managed by Caltech and MIT, California Institute. They have graduate students there showing off the gravity wave generator, and what it's doing is it's twisting space into shaping new dimensions. And what's happening is we're creating schisms in our universe that I have no clue what it means.
You know, I think that's sort of the bottom line, is that we're in the middle of a gigantic experiment, chemical, biological, electromagnetic. There's all, and nobody has any idea what the hell is going on or what's going to happen. And so I'm just going to have a little more absinthe.
and consider it as an existential Desjardins existential vision of...
I do and I don't. I actually think there's some sort of a purpose, but I'm just not sure what it is.
Well, that's because it's beyond you. It's God.
Yeah.
And what's happening is we're along for the ride.
Right. So enjoy the ride.
Right.
Right.
Because how do they put it in the planet Mars? Nice ride.
Nice ride.
Meow, and off he goes. Nice ride.
Because
you don't know where it's going to go. That's the wonderfulness of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you don't know what it means.
What fun would it be?
It's exciting.
It really is. Amazing time to be alive.
It's all going to be fine? Is that the voice of reason or the voice of coyote? Yeah, it all came around because it came around, or whatever that says.
Oh, man. All right, well, I think that is a good time to...
Oh, I got the voice of Coyote.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
Richard, it's been a pleasure, my friend.
It's always a pleasure.
Awesome.
Uncle.
I can't believe you're here, and thank you for for providing us.
Yeah, I thought you'd like to have this...
Oh, my God, incredible.
Live, it's...
Richard Alan Miller.
Saturday Night Live.
And he brings you... And thank you for coming out and looking around my property.
You bet. I enjoyed walking your four corners. I watched. I think you should grow flowers out there and sell your property for three times what it's worth.
Well, I love it there. I don't want to leave. But hey, y'all, we went out on the backside of my property and a beautiful great blue heron flew right across the lake in front of us, and we were all like, "All right, that's a great sign." And then what?
And then these vampires came out. Those mosquitoes. Was that what they call them? Mosquitoes? Yeah, those vampires. Yeah. They came out of the
and killed the heron.
Eat him up.
Actually, no, the heron was fine.
How does that little house of horrors eat me?
Eat me.
Feed me, mama.
All right. On the web, richardallenmiller.com. Northwest or nwbotanicals.com.
.org. Yeah, that creature under the bridge, that weird creature.
dogcancer.ca.
Yeah. And
alohamedicinals.ca.
I represent Aloha Medicinals up in Canada.
Right. And we didn't talk a whole lot about Nick's work. And
Nick Begich is publishing
lots
a number of my
books.
Yeah.
Right?
The new one that's going to be out in 2 weeks is the work I did with Navy SEALs. When we were called SEAL Corp. What they did is they wanted, when a SEAL came to a fork in the road, to have him have a mechanism by which he could make a decision that going right had a 3-sigma error coefficient to it, that going right was 99.975% probability.
Right,
that's the right
way to
go. Right.
To go.
And so we did a studies on extrasensory perception and hypnosis, and we found that individuals, anybody, when you went into a light state of hypnosis, and it's a very error bar, in my book, I describe more than 148 different biological ways you can measure different states of consciousness, and it's these five right here type of thing, that you can increase your ability in guessing 400 times over natural inference. That means that altered states each have a purpose, that you can do something that you cannot do in a conscious waking state, and that's the purpose of altered states of consciousness, that each one allows you to do something different
that you can't do here.
And the first book will start with ESP and hypnosis. The second book is on power tools, where you can use special physics to enhance these things like biofeedback and continuous breathing with didgeridoos and things of that nature. And then the third book will deal with the physics of how it all works, where you take something from psyche into matter. Chapter 6 is called Skin Physics and the Scheiblink Project, where we have a geometric form of a UFO and how it resonates in space because it's physical geometry. That's called skin physics. It has to do with the way different forms of water go through a microtubule. That's Alex Kavarainen and the physics of Finland. There's some incredible things that are happening. It really means that we now have the opportunity to create this world the way we want it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have some challenges to overcome, but I think we have all the tools we need to do it. And you're a guy who's really pushing it, Richard, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. So
my pleasure.
All right, everybody. Richard Alan Miller, once again, on the web, richardallenmiller.com, and lots of other places. You can link there. from his primary site and also from my site, okay? All right, it has been a pleasure, all. It's Mike Hagan, M-I-K-E-H-H-E-A-N, MikeHagan.com, on the web, and also KOPN.org. It's been a pleasure being with you all tonight. Thanks for listening to the program. Next week, Dr. Neil Goldstein, and a friend of Rick's, and the former editor of Omni Magazine, one of my favorite magazines. I wish it was still being published. But yeah, in a different sort of way, I guess. But anyway, it's going to be a really cool and fun program next week, and I hope you all listen in again, all right? Okay, to all of you, enjoy the week, all right? It's Mike, KOPN, Columbia, 89.5 FM. You've been listening to Radio Orbit. One last one here from Perry Comitatus. Kindred Sith is the name of the CD. You've heard music from it all night. This is called Genevieve McKinley. Take care of yourselves, everyone. I'll talk to you soon.
Her smile was like an open moon for everyone to see. As she flitted round the crowded room and tried too hard to please every man's eye upon her. Must sacrifice the flame. And she pulled him like a magnet, pushed him all away. Genevieve McKinley never makes up her mind. Likes to keep on dangling on the line. Another time, another day, she just might feel another way. At least that's what she tells you. She says your timing is all wrong. Take a number, stand in line, but don't take too long to realize. If you feel much of anything, then your feelings are too strong. 'Cause Genevieve McKinley never makes up her mind. Likes to keep on dangling on the line. Genevieve McKinley never makes up her mind. Likes to keep on dangling. Loves to see you hanging. Loves to watch you dangle on the line.